Jam! Hello again and welcome back to another fun-filled episode of Monday Night Magic here on the MTGcast Network. I am Chewy, your faithful host.
I believe in you.
Let's say...
Oh, we're bad if you thought that was funny. This is not good.
And with me, as always, are the bow tie guy and the damn goblin that I can't seem to successfully kill.
One of us will be back next upkeep.
Yeah. So,
hi, Clues.
Hi.
Hi, Squee.
Hi. Hi, Chewy.
Yo.
Combo breaker.
Combo breaker.
Yeah, we're on topic. This is gonna be great.
This is awesome. Hey,
who believes in magic?
I believe in a thing called love.
And I know you do.
See, wait, I knew you'd take it in different directions. It was fine.
Wait, isn't that from the Ghostbusters sound? I believe it's magic. Magic. Oh, I love the first Ghostbusters.
Oh, yeah, it is. It is. Hey, did you see the, no, look, we gotta get back to magic.
Yeah, right.
Sorry.
Okay,
sorry.
So yeah, this is episode 534 of Monday Night Magic, and we are here to
here
talk
on the MTGcast Network.
What? No, every time I repeat, I'm going to truncate slightly, so I was just going to lop that part off.
Ah.
But no, you had to go and screw it up. Here on the MTGcast Network. No, we're talking about magic, because Commander Preview started, and Standard Rotation is all screwed up. It's a snafu, right? Situation normal. It's the week after the Pro Tour, so we've got Standard, and the guy got DQ'd, and oh my god, this is all crazy. So let's start with the biggest bit that Clues actually asked about the day it happened. Oh, can we please talk about this in depth? So, on the 19th.
So the new F&M promo. Oh.
The new F&M promo is actually Noose Constrictor, and it's a snake that has coiled himself into a noose, and that's kind of disturbing.
Yeah, look, any creature that you can tie in a knot and it doesn't die shouldn't exist. That's it. I'm just saying it right now.
He's not wrong. That's terrifying.
Very much so.
Do you feel good now that you've gotten that off your chest, Clues?
I feel better, yeah.
I have a really, like, terrible, not quite dirty joke that I really feel like sharing now, so I will. So if you're underage, then by all means, don't repeat this, but,
fast forward.
Hey, Bill and Clues.
Yeah.
Hey.
Why don't snakes have balls?
Old Testament.
Because they don't.
because they're abominations in the eyes of God?
Because most of them don't know how to dance.
Oh, I get it.
I heard that on a Penn and Teller show whose name I cannot say on this, podcast.
Yeah, that's fair. It's a good show, though.
It is, yeah. So, anyway, so yeah, first things first, the F&M promo for January is, in fact, Noose Constrictor, so that's pretty cool, but enough of that.
Man, I am glad we led with the top story.
Right? Well, we gotta give the people what they want. We got snake jokes
and F&M promo. Is this a new policy?
Yeah, I just started it.
Because I wasn't informed about that. Giving people what they want.
Anyway, on
show
the 19th of October, which was last Wednesday, which, as you might know, listeners, this is Monday Night Magic, so we record on Monday nights. So 2 days later, of course.
Is that also a new policy?
Shut up, Clues. Aaron Forsyth posted on the Wizards website that standard rotation happening every year. Just kidding. We're going back to the 2-year rotation. What? What? What?
The 2-year rotation or the once per year rotation?
Okay, wait a minute. I screwed that all up, didn't I?
yeah, I was going to say.
Because it's 2 blocks per year now. Okay, look.
Right.
When you've been playing Magic as long as I have, it doesn't.
You play Magic? Is that a new policy?
Sorry, when you've been dealing with Magic as long as I have.
Okay, thank you.
These things all... So in my brain, because it's been that way for so many years, 1 block equals 1 year.
Right.
So my bad. Excuse me.
So do-over.
Yeah, do-over. Starting over. It's entirely possible that I will edit all that, but not very probable.
No, not likely at all.
Okay, so let me start over. The once yearly rotation was changed to rotating every new block, right?
When they brought in the 2-block system.
Yeah, when the 2 blocks per year thing happened, they were like, okay, Because of that, we're going to change the way rotations happen. A rotation will happen at the beginning of every new block, which means every block would be legal in Standard for 18 months, right? Yeah.
Yes, the block would be 18 months, which means, you know, one of the sets would have an 18-month lifespan and the other would have a 15-month lifespan.
Right. Except, apparently, that's bad. So, just kidding, it's back to once a year now.
Meaning there has been and will only be one time when we actually had the other system apply, which was recently. Because the rotation that we just had when the set came out is exactly when all those cards would have gone away anyway.
Yeah. So, wait a minute. So that means the rotation before that was the only thing that was ever affected?
Yes.
So the Origins Cons rotation?
So, like, the Cons and Fate Reforged rotation, when that went away.
Cons and Fate Reforged, that's the one.
That was the only time it's ever mattered, because we got rid of that Rhino that had been annoying us for a year and a half. And then the rotation that we just had with Origins and Dragons of Tarkir would have happened anyway under the old system and the new one, because this is when we do rotations. So there was only ever one time when it applied, and that is now in the past.
Yeah. So for all the people who said, well, could you imagine Collected Company being around another? No, it wouldn't have, so shut up.
Yeah, that has always been the case for the spring sets.
Yeah. So excuse me. Yeah, this whole thing, without having a diagram or having it written out in front of me, I sort of forget how things work. Which I bet if I scrolled down, there would be a diagram, but I'm too lazy to scroll down.
Well, they didn't dig out that weird animating one that they used when they first explained it to us.
Yeah, although I posted that in the chat. So
I was wondering if that's guys, what that was.
Yeah, that's totally what that is. If you hover over it, it will totally animate that crap for you. So, okay, listeners, back in the day, in August of 2014, Mark Rosewater wrote an article called Metamorphosis. And in it, he laid out the crazy new rotation structure that would include, we don't have core sets anymore. Those are gone because we know Clues likes them. So gone. Just straight up gone. And then we went to this weird, there was a transition period. We just, like literally just now, got through the transition period and we're ready to ease into the new normal. Therefore, it is time to change the new normal back to sort of the old normal, but there's still no core set because we know Clues likes them.
Yeah, the ultimate end result is that means that now the sets that come out in fall will, the fall and winter sets will stick around longer than they would have before. The spring sets are unaffected. The end result just meaning that, hey, get used to the cards that you have right now. They'll be around till next year.
Yeah.
So with the new two-block structure, though, it means we're always going to have between five and eight sets legal. Is that right? Because when rotation occurs,
yes,
we'll have two plus the first set of the next block. So two blocks plus the first set of the next block for a total of five sets.
Right.
Then we'll finish that block, start and finish the next block, getting us up to eight.
Yeah.
And then when the first set of the block after that comes out, then we'll just rotate a bunch of crap.
We'll drop off the first two blocks in Standard, which will drop four total sets and knock us back down to five, because we'll have the previous year and the new fall one, like we have right now.
Right. And under the now old, what was the new Standard, we would go between five and six blocks, but we'd rotate twice a year.
Yes.
When will then be now?
Soon.
Right now.
All right, great.
Well, there it went.
I guess.
They're not waiting for this. This is just how it is now.
Well, specifically when we say now, this is actually the past for the people listening though. But this for them, it is now.
Okay, let's try not to be too obtuse.
Yeah, that's why we don't have to suspend anymore. It's messy.
Oh my God.
So here's, I have some issues with this. I know I've been known to be curmudgeonly a bit and averse to change when it happens and get off my lawn, yada, yada, yada.
I mean, you are swinging that stick around really hard right now.
But I really feel like they didn't even give this new regime. It is a cudgel.
Yeah.
It's more of a shillelagh. I don't really understand. They didn't really give this new Standard a chance to really stretch its legs, the new rotation regime.
Yeah.
And they're just jettisoning it right away. And
yeah, they didn't really give it much of a chance to see how it actually works. My best guess is that there was some criticism when this was originally announced, if you remember, that it meant that overall your standard cards would have a shorter lifespan because some of them, which would previously have the lifespan of up to actually 2 years, now had a maximum ceiling of 18 months. And the fear was that would make people less prone to investing in standard because the cards were going to be useful for a shorter amount of time. And if you were all in for investing in standard, they were effectively squeezing out an extra, you know, sets worth of cards out of you every like 3 years if you add it all up. Which, you know, is a massive cost given the amount of money people pay to stay current in standard.
Like the other side of that was that in theory, because standard was a shorter format, then the prices wouldn't be as high.
That was the theory.
That was the theory. But since we never actually got to test it, I guess we'll never know.
I will say that, I actually kind of wanted this to stick around a little bit just because I think that having a rotation twice a year did shake up standard.
Well, that was the whole point. Yeah.
Right.
Well,
actually, and it was doing its job.
The whole point was to sell more cards, but
right.
One of the good side effects was that standard would stay fresher.
Well, the thing is, there are cards that never get a chance to even have a shot at standard because the standard gets solidified really hard when certain ridiculously powerful cards like Siege Rhino and the incredible mana fixing from the set that it was, you know, printed with stick around for a very long period of time. Like if the fetch lands didn't go away earlier this year, we probably wouldn't have seen a lot of the stuff that we did. It would have just been more of that with slightly tuned out decks. I mean, I can't say that for certainty because we don't know, but with those rotating, we suddenly saw a drop in the four color decks.
Oh yeah.
And by extension, we saw, you know, the rise of, you know, Coco and stuff like that. And so we had a different standard. I mean, mind you, it wasn't, you know, a completely unique experience, but it was a change. And now we're going to be looking at these cards that have just come out right now in Kaladesh for 2 years. And if these cards prove to be more powerful than other stuff, like, you know, if these copters are ridiculously good for the next 2 years, that's a slot that won't be available for another card to fill in a year and a half, if they're that much better. Now, in a perfect world where everything is designed properly and things can actually, you know, ebb and flow with a metagame, then this wouldn't really be an issue, but we can't live in a perfect world like that because it's nearly impossible. So, I don't know. Like, I'm not very critical of what we're losing here because I was very critical of the initial change because I don't like the idea of them essentially getting an extra set's worth of money out of us without actually having to design more cards. But I do think that the arguments that they put out for justifying the decision to do that should have maybe been addressed when they decided, no, we're not doing this anymore. And as far as I can tell, they haven't. So, I don't know. What do you guys think?
I worry about standard becoming stagnant. I mean, I think you hit it on the head there that it having rotation twice a year should shake it up. Should.
I mean,
and I think it would have, but we'll never know because that's not happening again.
I mean, to be fair, the danger of standard being stagnant is now back to the same danger it always has been.
Yeah, and we here on this show have suffered through, you know, week after week when it's the same decks over and over and over again, and we all get so damn bored of it.
True, but they don't care what we think because we're just talking about it. We're not actually out there buying cards and playing it.
Well, yeah, but I like to think that we reflect at least some of the community's concerns from time to time, even if it's only by accident. Certainly not by design.
Like the mono black decks. What was the damn mechanic called from Theros?
Devotion.
Yeah, the mono black devotion decks were a relatively standard stagnation. The Callblade was a stagnation. The Abzan Glut.
The Abzan Glut, yes. I agree with the Abzan
I don't
glut.
Know if that one I would call a stagnation exactly, because there were at least four or five different versions of those three colored decks.
No, that was more a suffering on, in all of those decks, they had about the same 16 to 20 cards, and you just couldn't justify not including those in most of them. And so, while there was a variety of them, And a deck with 60 cards, if the mana base and another 20 cards are pretty much the same, then you're not really seeing a whole lot of actual cards in standard seeing play. So those cards become necessary and expensive, and everything else becomes relatively worthless. And that is a concern that some people have.
And honestly, the Black Devotion decks, wasn't that really Printing Thoughtseize in standard was actually a terrible idea?
Well, there was also the mono blue deck, and it was being really effective for a while too. I think it was just a matter of, in that exact instance, the devotion mechanic, when you actually did what it was wanting you to do, was just pushed a little farther. Like, you know, I mean, you remember Gary. You remember how effective Gary was at just ending games. Like, and that was just one of many tools that were available. And the fact that you had, yeah, the power of Thoughtseize made the black deck a little bit better than the blue deck. But that was mostly just what standard was for a while, because you had that and you had Packrat running around just, you know, having a party.
Reflex.
Yeah, but I mean, like, there are always going to be good cards like that. I mean, I don't want to sound like, you know, when I say, and then the Rhinos went away, it's because, you know, the Rhino and Collected Company and Packrat, these are all just really good cards, and there will always be the really good card. Like, right now, it's the Thopter. And, you know, this will continue to happen.
My favorite tinfoil hat conspiracy that conspiracy theory on this actually came from Mike on the last episode of the Mana Pool, where he said it's entirely possible that someone looked at mana bases from in standard from Khans of Tarkir with the fetches and all that and said, "Oh God, what have we done?" And they said, "Look, here's how we fix it. We're gonna get them out of standard 6 months early. It'll be awesome."
Accelerate rotation, and then we'll take it back.
Yeah.
Well, like, before any of this, to credit, this is one thing they did do well when they originally announced that they were doing this. They announced it a year before it was even relevant, so that people knew when they went in that the cards you are buying will be useful in standard for less time. They were very upfront about that. And that is fair. Like, that was a fair thing to do. We appreciated it. I don't, like, it was a good sign of, like, okay, we know this is going to impact stuff. And if this affects what you want to buy, keep that in mind. And then when they changed it back now, they're like, and we're doing that instead. And it's okay because your cards are not really being affected. You just get to use these ones longer. I imagine somewhere in the back end, people were saying, like, you know, we're making money hand over fist with all these supplements too. But what if we could get people to have more faith in standard? Let's just do that. And it's like, I don't, as far as I'm aware, standard's doing fine, but I don't know. That's data we will never see. So. I mean, the earning report says they're doing great forever, so I don't even know if it means anything anymore.
Pretty much.
I agree with that rapper.
Yeah, sorry.
Was it 50 Cent?
I mean, 50 was in that game.
And I agreed with the things he said in that game, especially when he said, I'm gonna shoot you. But
so I have two things I want to say here about stagnation. Because okay. I do fear? That's not right. I worry about stagnation in standard, even though I don't play it. So this is all armchair quarterbacking, let's say. That's a thing in Magic, right? Quarterbacking. Armchair developing. So it really feels to me in these descriptions that we've been making of times when it was stagnant, even in recent memory, this almost seems like either a design or a development problem, that there were cards that were so pushed that they were the obvious best way to go in standard.
Would argue that that will always be a development problem.
Right. And I was going
to
say,
job to balance that.
So we'll go development rather than design. So it wasn't really, even though we accelerated rotation to try and fix this, and now we're decelerating rotation.
That's not the physics.
Not care about it anymore. Rotation isn't the problem. Development's the problem. But at the same time, I feel like even though this is really a development problem, it will always be a development problem. Because even if we nuke, let's say 3 weeks after a set hits, they look at standard and they go, well, this is obviously the best card and it's dominating everything. So we'll just go ahead and ban that. This isn't what's happening, listeners. I just want to be clear. If they did that, we would just fall back to the second best card. And if we banned that, we just fall back to the third best card. So I feel like there's always going to be a best card. Development can never actually fix this, and it's just the way standard's going to be. Is that too cynical?
I mean, that's the way it's always been. Like, people play with the best cards. If you were to print a set that had, you know, nothing but shocks and lightning bolts, then you would find people running lightning bolts over shocks. I mean, mind you, it'd be a terribly boring set, but you would find more lightning bolts than shocks running around if the rules allowed it.
And, I'm pretty sure you'd see exactly four of each in every deck, honestly.
Right. And that's what you would do, but you would, the winner would be the one who draws more lightning bolts.
Yeah.
God, that would be sucky. Let's not dwell on that too much.
I don't know. I'm really enjoying it.
Well, the math would be whichever one draws all their cards first, because 20. But regardless, the thing there is, people would run the best cards. And like you're saying, that's certainly going to be the case. I think the biggest challenge that development's going to run into is simply the fact that there have to be better cards. It's going to happen. And their main job is to make sure that it doesn't get to the point where the gulf is so big that there's only one viable deck. Every time we've seen that happen, it's been terrible. That's what leads to bannings. That's what leads to trying to fix stuff. And whenever you have that going on, you will encounter this problem. And on top of that, I would not doubt that somewhere in the process, there are conversations, very real conversations that are, we need spotlight cards. These are things that have to be better than other stuff. You have to make the Planeswalker cards good because those are an important brand element for the franchise. Otherwise, you get absolutely miserable stuff like
Tibble.
You run into the problem of the main character of the multi-year story arc of the Weatherlight having a terrible card that nobody wants to play. That's a problem. Like, no one likes Gerard Capuchon. It's not a good card. At least for the scope of the main character of Magic the Gathering for several years. That's why you don't very often find bad Jace Bellerin cards. Because they need him to be good. Because he's the face of the game a lot of the time. It's actually a wonder they have so many bad Chandra cards, and I think they're still trying to figure that out. But the last few have been wonderful, so we got there. But like, there are factors involved in the releasing of elements for the game beyond simply, can we make a perfectly balanced game? Some cards will need to be better than other ones. And there's a certain mathematical value to saying, we want a dominating deck. They just don't want it to be so dominating that it's problematic. And that's a much harder thing to do than simply, this is too good, let's ease up on it. And, you know, as long as there's a big and impressive deck that people can just buy, you know, cards and get in on, then people feel like the game is accessible. And that if they make that investment or they buy enough packs to do it, then they'll be able to play for a while. Wizards makes their money off of the idea that every once in a while, someone can't keep using the deck they've already invested in. They have to get another one. And in a perfect world, there are so many viable decks that people make two or three decks and they go with the one that fits the metagame. And that's where their maximum money is. And that's what they want to balance. When they make standard last longer, then people are more willing to invest in the fall sets because they know the cards they get out of those are better for the grand scheme of value. And the spring sets suffer a little bit because, I mean, let's be real, Dragon's Maze. Like, even with all the other flaws with that set, those cards had the shortest lifespan they were going to get, short of, like, a core set at the time. And when some cards have longer sets than others, or lifespans than others, people are going to buy less of them. So, there's a lot. It's a more complicated than simply, we don't want standard to stagnate, or we don't care that it stagnates, as long as people have faith in it. But I don't think that, ultimately, they gave this one enough time to figure out, and now we're never really going to know. But I'm glad they were willing to experiment with it. I like when they mess with stuff. I don't think the three block structure was right. I think the pair of smaller blocks is going to be better for the game overall, and it's going to continue to be better. I think it's going to be kind of confusing for onboarding people when they're like, well, this set will last for 2 years and this other set will last for a year and a half. But people coming into the game have to be told a lot of stuff, and that'll just be another thing to learn. I know that I was talking to someone recently who hasn't played Magic the Gathering before, and they asked why the game was so expensive. And then I explain to them that, well, you have to buy more cards every few years. And they're like, why? And it's like, well, you can't play them in the biggest flagship format after a certain amount of time. And they're like, then why do you buy them? Like, why would you spend all that money on something that becomes worthless? And I'm like, you're going to go far. You'll be happy.
Did you let them hold the cards? Because that's usually what does it.
I did not have the cards on me because I try not to carry narcotics.
Fair enough.
All right. Well, you think we've beaten the rotation flip-flop enough?
Yeah, probably.
I mean, you know, till the next time they do it.
Fair enough. I mean,
I don't think this is the end. I think they're going to keep messing around with it until they're happy, and they're never going to be happy.
My only real problem with it was that we didn't get to go a full round. under the old style to see how it worked. Mm-hmm. Like, we never...
Yeah, I wanted to see what a format that has Shadows over Innistrad without Battle for Zendikar it would look like. And now we're not going to get that. Because they play very differently, and I think that having Shadows over Innistrad without a lot of the power cards from the Battle for Zendikar would actually change a lot to see in play. So now we're not going to see it, and that's kind of sad. Because it's not like we do Block Constructed.
Yeah, well, Block Constructed is boring, so.
Well, yeah, I'm not saying we should, but.
Yeah. All right, then.
Yeah, well, take that horse.
It's dead, Bill. It's fine.
Yeah, but I come back. Why can't it?
We'll tell you when you're older.
Aw, when will that be?
Well, at the rate that you keep dying, it won't.
So, oh, well, then I'll live in ignorance. Carry on.
Fair enough. So let's move on to the Grand Prix that happened this weekend, because they were standard, and it's new standard still. We can still call it new, right? It's only, like, week four?
It's still got that new standard smell.
Yeah, it does.
Smells like oil. Oil and exhaust and control.
So let's go to, let's do the less interesting one first. Let's go to GP Kuala Lumpur, which had, how many people were here? 769?
Yeah.
Playing standard where, whoop, wait a minute, hang on. This is Providence. No, hang on, wrong tab. Here we go. Kuala Lumpur.
And darkness.
Which saw, Fumiya Matsumoto win with the Mardu Vehicles deck. Yeah.
Road Rage.
The one that added black for Unlicensed Disintegration. This deck actually looks like a variation on, the one we saw at the Pro Tour. Maybe not a variation. Might be straight up. No, cause Gideon's in the main. I think at the Pro Tour, Gideon was in the board?
I thought we saw a couple of different
versions. We saw a few of them. One of them had a lot of Gideon in the main. I think one of them actually had like four Gideon in the main, and most of the other ones had Gideon in the board. So this might be a half and half. I'm talking
specifically about the Mardu one that was in the top eight.
Oh, I gotcha.
Yeah.
I have that open. I'll check.
Oh, hey, look at you.
All right. Mardu Vehicles had two Gideon in the main. No, it's very similar. Let me see if they're the same.
I mean,
that looks very, I think they might actually be the same. Yeah, it's the same list, at least in the main. The sideboard's different, but.
Four copters and three cultivators caravan? That sounds right.
Yep.
Yep. Okay.
Yep, they're the same. It's the same list. Unless I miss something and, like, the sideboard varies, but you'd expect that from one event to another anyway.
Well, I should hope so, yeah. Alright then, which means we talked about it last week, which means there's nothing to see here.
Yeah, the only thing that I really noticed is that when I was re-looking at it, it feels interesting to look at the Toolcraft Exemplar, and I didn't click this early on, and you guys probably mentioned it on your shows, but the Toolcraft Exemplar actually has Metalcraft in its own weird way, which is why its name having Toolcraft in it was actually kind of clever.
I mean, I went away from him.
I'm going to pretend that I noticed that, and sure. I didn't realize
so, like, just the text on it is, at the beginning of combat on your turn, if you control an artifact, Toolcraft Exemplar gets +2/+1 till end of turn. That's whatever. But if you control three or more artifacts, it also gains first strike until end of turn, which would qualify it for Metalcraft. So, it's kind of neat.
Nice. I had not noticed that. You are correct.
I mean, there's no reason to write Metalcraft on it, but that's just sort of a neat design throwback.
Yeah.
And hey, here you essentially have White Delver. So, here's your 3-2 for one that situationally also has some ridiculous powers.
Okay then, so second place.
Second place.
We have Mark Lawrence, Tubola? We're gonna call him Tubola. Who is playing the White-Blue Flash deck. Which is very similar to the one that top aided the Perto.
Yeah, like some of the numbers are shifted around, but it's pretty similar.
Same basic
like,
idea, yeah.
Like this one has Void Shatter in it. The Perto one did not.
Well, there you go. So, how about third place? Yuki Ichikawa is playing, White Blue Flash.
Huh. Dun dun dun.
Alright, well, let's move on then. What place is this? 1, 2, 3, fourth place. Anthony Lee is playing, White Blue Flash. Is that three? That's three.
Yeah.
So far.
Alright, next, how about Yuta Takahashi? He's playing, White Blue Flash.
Huh.
Yeah.
It almost looks like they all got together, though, and decided that everybody should have, like, one, maybe two cards different.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah, like, they're not running the exact same list, but it's sort of what happens when you have a bunch of control decks where the actual breakdown of which cards you pick and the ratios ends up being the difference when you inevitably run into a giant pile of mirror matches like they've obviously done.
Oh, well, I'm sure we'll see some more decks here in the top 8.
Yeah, so 6th place is Marcus O, who's playing White Blue Flash. But he's got Gisela and Thalia and Blessed Alliance in his deck.
Yep.
So those are not the same cards. Everything else is the same card.
And should he be in the mood, he can put in the one Bruna.
He totally can, yeah. So, but it's still, you know, 53 of the same deck, so.
Yeah, you're still running the fundamental package.
That's 5 in the top 8 now, right? Okay, yeah. So in 7th place, Ah Yong Wai Ken is playing White Blue Flash. Seriously, people?
Yeah. We need to come up with a better name for this.
Yeah, like, we could just call it Ah and see how many people get it.
You could probably just call it Spellqueller.
You alright there, Clues?
Yeah, I'm good. I'll be fine. Okay. I'm just gonna call it Savior of the Universe.
Yeah, he'll save every one of us. And then in 8th place, look, here is something that's not White Blue Flash, but it's Marty Vehicles.
Diversity!
Piloted by Teruya Kakume. This one is basically the same idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's got Pia instead of Gideon.
Yeah, the 3 Gideon are in the board.
Yeah.
Hanging out with Chandra.
Hey, girl, hey.
She's all defiant and stuff.
So, yeah, that's your top 8 in Kuala Lumpur.
So, in case you were wondering earlier, should we refer this to the, like, more boring, less important one? Not because of the venue or the people playing, but because of what we just went over. That is a very low-variance top 8, even though the decks all have small differences. Yeah. From a structural standpoint, that is very similar to be coming 1 week off of Pro Tour.
And I would say we should go to, like, up past the, like, up to 16th place or something, but I think most of these decks we'll be talking about in a minute.
Yeah, and on top of that, like, we've got 2 more standard tournaments to talk about, so we'll get there.
One of those really matters. But, yeah. So there was Delirium, some Black-Red Zombies, more Vehicles, more Zombies, Boros Vehicles, more Flash, more Delirium, and more Flash in the top 16. There you go.
You got me doing it now, too.
Damn right we do. So that was Kuala Lumpur. Let's go then to GP Providence here in insert adjective here, United States.
The Quahog State.
How many people were playing here? 1,185.
The entire state.
A bunch of these people were not from the state.
We invaded a state.
I do know that my buddy Jacob was there. Chris Lansdell was there, although he was judging, so that doesn't count. So yeah, a lot of these people. By the way, I was gonna try to get Chris back on this week, but he's on a plane. Like right now. Like right the hell now. And he's too good to podcast from a plane. So, screw you, Chris. But who won this? Crap, I closed it. Crap, hang on. Who won? Quick, while I get it back open.
Wang Yichen? I know I'm pronouncing this wrong, just so you know. I'm aware. With Black-Green Delirium.
Yay! Okay, wait.
Stiffren!
Hooray!
Look, it's Liliana. She's here to save us.
She's the last hope.
It's not really different, though.
Well, it's different from the decks that we just had.
Okay, yeah, that's true.
It is
like,
not
Liliana is the last hope for a standard with more than 2 decks. She'll save every one of us. All right.
But yeah, this is your standard Black-Green Delirium deck, although it is running 1 Noxious Gearhulk, which makes me insanely happy.
Yeah.
But yeah, the rest is pretty much what you'd expect. With your Lilies, your Advocates, your Trackers, your Ishkana, your Galitas, your Emrakul, Traverse, Transgress, Grapple, Grasp, Murder, Vessel. It's all the... Look, I can just say one word and you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's rocking the newness in the board. I don't know if she's popped in or not, but it's a new tool.
What are we talking about? Oh, Nissa.
Battle Force.
Yeah, check her out.
There's also Appetite for the Unnatural in the board, right?
That's true, yeah.
Hey, look, it blows up smuggler's copters and gains you life.
Yeah. This is the gain two life naturalize for two and a green.
Oh, yeah.
These are still new cards.
There's also a Lost Legacy, which I keep having to read.
Oh, I forgot about that, yeah. That's Poppin' Alar's card.
Oh, Poppin' Alar. Oh, he dead. Like, actually dead.
Yeah, like, he did.
Not like dead, like Mama's dead. Oh, wait, no, Mama's back. No, he died on camera. We saw it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then. So that's first place. What else we have? Seth Manfield in second playing a more different black-green Delirium deck.
Yeah.
This one is running Grim Flayer, so it's got a little bit more on the front end. And it's also running Mind Rack Demon. Buh.
Yeah.
And Pilgrim's Eye. Instead of things like the Sylvan Advocate and the rest of the Tireless Trackers.
Yeah.
Still got the one Gear Hulk, though.
Do you need more than one?
I like terrifying. I like all the Gear Hulks, but I think the black one seems to be like the best one in a vacuum, if that makes sense.
Insofar as the blue one doesn't do anything in a vacuum?
Well, like, the blue one, you need to have the cards that you want to recast, right, or else he's just big. And
yeah, the blue one takes more synergy. The black one is like, oh, they have a creature.
Exactly.
You know what we can do? Oh, yeah. Yeah, also Menace is just a nice ability to have on a 5/4.
It's true.
It's going to kill something, possibly multiple something.
Hmm. Well, there's also Pick the Brain in the board.
Yeah, I was just looking at that. I forgot how creepy that art was.
It's not. Transgress the Mind.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's not the kind that would make Clues go, eh, but it's pretty creepy.
No, this is more like Power Rangers villain creepy, where they're like, here's a cheap effect that we can do that makes things look weird.
That sounds right. Yeah. All right. Well, good on Seth Manfield. So third place. Here we go. Jackie Wang's Black Red Zombie Madness. I'm pretty sure that's a kung fu movie.
I think that's probably some kind of like 70s exploitation film.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Jackie Wang's Black Red Zombie Madness. Those black red brain eating zombie bastards.
I'm imagining the trailer.
But this deck is, well, it's zombies, so it's got your Crypt Breaker. Your insolent neonate for the, well, that's the madness part. So it's got your Crypt Breaker. It's got your, prized amalgam, your haunted dead. Well, that's pretty much it for the zombies. And then there's lots of stuff for discarding, like the insolent neonate, things to discard, like the scrap heap scrounger.
Yeah.
The Voldaren Pariah. And then Cathartic Reunion, Lightning Axe, Fiery Temper, Unlicensed Disintegration, and of course, Smuggler's Copter. So this is just, hard and fast, I'm guessing.
Yeah. I mean, like, in true madness fashion, you're doing things that aren't fair because you're doing quickly. And you're also proceeding to disintegrate without a license, so you don't even care.
Just flaunting the law?
Flaunting. Is that the
right word? Floundering.
Floundering with the words to flaunt the law.
Yeah. Also, it's got the Distended Mindbender in the board for clues.
Is it Dr. Distended? Distended Mindbender?
I did not finish.
No, it's Dr. Mindbender after he gets old and is distended.
Oh, that's sadder.
It is. All right. Well, then let's keep going. In fourth place, oh, look, it's Osip Levadovich because it's, you know, the 90s again. Playing Red-White Vehicles.
Road Rage.
Playing Road Rage with Smuggler's Copter and Fleet Wheel Cruiser, like you'd expect. Yep.
Vroom, vroom.
Avacyn, Pia, Dipala, Veteran Motorist, Selfless Spirit, Metalcraft Exemplar, Thraben Inspector. Yep. Exactly what you think.
Makes sense.
Got the Sky Sovereign in the board, along with Chandra, along with all your Gideons. Yep. Seems good.
Yep.
But nothing new to say there. Next up, Zachary, how do you say his name? That's really cool.
Keen?
Zachary. Zachary Peachy Keen is playing Blue White Flash. Oh, man. In sixth place. I was expecting it, and it still got me. It's terrible. In sixth place, Maxim Belanger is playing Black Green Delirium. This is what the hell is going on here? This is really cool. Okay, so four lilies because it's got your vessel, your traverse. Okay, yep. And then removal, your grasp of darkness and murder. Oh, there's a grapple with the past too. So lots of, you know, things to throw things in the graveyard. Makes sense. Yeah. Ruinous path for more removal. All right. And then it gets weird. So we've got one Kalitas, three Mind Rack Demon, two Ishkana, one Sylvan Advocate, one Tireless Tracker. Oh, four Grim Flayer because he's awesome. Two Filigree Familiar because screw you aggro. One Distended Mindbender, one Emrakul because Delirium, and then one Verdurous Gearhulk. Hmm. So it's like it's doing a best of Black Green Delirium. It's like I couldn't decide between this deck and that deck, so I smashed them together and picked out my favorite bits of each one.
For one night only, at the Soaring Eagle Casino, the best of Green Black.
yes. So that's pretty cool. In next place, where are we at here?
Oh, there's an Obnixilus in the board.
Yeah, there have actually been several Obnixilus in the boards.
Obnixili?
Yeah.
Yeah, actually all of these Black Green Delirium decks have a Kool-Aid Man in the board.
Well, yeah, he's recurring murder.
Yeah, he is.
That's except, actually enough in a lot of games.
Oddly enough, except for the next place deck, Dave Shields in seventh. He doesn't have one down there.
No.
He still has the four Grim Flayer. He's playing more. This looks like Seth Manfield's deck. It's very similar. It might be the same deck, in fact. It's very close. Oh, without the Noxious Gearhulk. No!
Dun, dun, dun.
And green. Then in eighth, Ian Bosley is playing the red-white vehicles, the Road Rage deck.
Vroom, vroom.
Complete with vroom, vroom. And yeah, looks like standard is solved. No need to innovate anymore. Everyone, please go home.
So I like how, depending on which GP you start with, standard is completely doomed or interesting.
I don't know. Like this one had four Delirium decks in the top eight, two Boros vehicles. I don't know if interesting is quite right, but at least it wasn't, you know.
Well, six and two is a much worse breakdown.
True. So let's check out, scroll. Where are the rest of the damn decks? Top eight? Nine
top
through 64.
Five. Oh.
Let's see. More blue, white, flash. Four color aggro. What the hell is this? Oh.
Does it leave out blue?
Or no.
Or am I disappointed?
You're disappointed. It's got Tamiyo in it. Oh, it's, what the hell is this deck?
It's a
Longtusk Cub.
Seated commander product.
So yeah, Longtusk Cub is a thing in the, this is an energy deck, clearly. Cause I'm seeing a tune with Aether, and there's no reason to play that in a deck that's not an energy deck. So you've got your Longtusk Cub, your Servant of the Conduit, your Voltaic Brawler, your Harness Lightning, your Whirler Virtuoso, and of course your, Aether Hub to check out, to work with energy. You've got a Tamiyo, you got three Tamiyos actually. Your Tireless Trackers because you're playing green and you want to hit things. Your Reflector Mage, remember that card? Spell Queller and Woodland Wanderer because you're playing four colors, so why the hell not have a 6/6 for four? Seems fine.
Seems like a good plan.
Especially when it has Vigilance and Trample. And of course your Verdurous Green Hulk, Gear Hulk, Green Hulk, because you like, smashing. Which is what Verdurous Gear Hulk does, yeah.
It is the way of green.
Yeah. So yeah, it's like, wait, where's the fourth color? Red, blue, white, green. Yeah, okay. It's essentially Bant aggro with a little bit of red thrown in. Well, I said
Burning Bant.
There's Harness Lightning, Voltaic Brawler, and the Whirler Virtuoso. That's such a hard word to say. So maybe not a little bit. It's actually a four-color deck. Look at this.
Yeah, it's spread out pretty well.
That's crazy talk. Wow. Okay, then what else we have? White and Flash. Oh, who was that? That was Julian Wilds. Nice. Mardu Vehicles, White Blue Flash, White Blue Flash, Flash, save every one of us. Okay, so there were just a bunch of Flash decks in a row there. One, two, three, four, five decks in a row there. More vehicles. More vehicles. Black Green Aggro Delirium. What the hell is this? Greg Scherzo. Gnarlwood Dryads, Scrap Heap Scrounger, Grim Flare, four of the Verdurous Gear Hulk, Kalitas, Blossoming Defense, Grasp of Darkness, Smuggler's Copter. Damn. That's a lot of beating you about the head and shoulders.
Yep.
Oh, and there's a key to the city in the board.
Yep.
And it looks like it's got some of the slower pieces just hanging out in the board. Like, there's two Ishkenaz here, Omnixilis, the Transgress. So it can actually flip over to a slower game plan if it needs to.
Yeah, I imagine when it swaps in to the, like, Arborback Stomper mode, it's like, I will now outlast the fast decks, but still threaten the slow decks. So it goes mid-range if it needs to pretty easily.
Yeah, seems good. More flash, more vehicles. Here's another aggro delirium that's sort of a, like the last one mixed with one of the previous ones. Here we go. Sky Mason is playing Jeskai Control. Hey, you remember the Control meta that we saw at the Pro Tour? Nope.
I remember watching the Control fight forever.
Yeah. So Sky Mason is playing the first actual Control deck that we've seen here. In 24th place with your Jace, your Torrential Gear Hulks with its Faucet Hands. Your board sweepers with Radiant Flames and Fumigate, a bunch of card draw and removal and counter magic, Dynavolt Tower, and yeah, neat. Red-White Tokens. Hey, here's the Red-White Tokens deck that we saw at the Pro Tour in 25th. Do more vehicles, more vehicles. Where am I? 28th? Okay, well, I'll stop when I get to 32nd. Hey, look, Craig Wesco's playing white-black aggro because, you know, he plays white weenie. That's his thing.
Yeah, doesn't it feel like he'd be in Boros aggro, though? Like,
Well, it's actually essentially mono-white with Scrap Heap Scrounger.
Yeah. If you're looking between the... Yeah, it's still a Craig Wesco deck.
Oh, totally, yeah. So it's...
You guys remember when he was here and he was awesome?
Yeah, he was.
He was. Cool.
Ow, so we've got Gideon, the Toolcraft Exemplar, Thraven Inspector, Selfless Spirit, an Aerial Responder, also known as Dwarven Lighthawk, and Scrap Heap Scrounger, and then some removal with Declaration in Stone, and Stasis Snare, and some Pump with Always Watching, and then Smuggler's Copter, and Stitcher's Graft.
Yep.
That's how you know it's a Craig Wesco deck.
Cause who else?
Yeah, right? So then that got him 28th, so that's pretty good.
I mean, having something that doesn't untap doesn't sound like a Craig Wesco thing, but killing you before it matters does.
yes. Plus, if he really wants to, he can throw it on a copter and swing for 6 in the air while looting.
Yeah.
That seems fine. Buh. More flash. White-black control in 31st place. Look at these
things. They let Obnix out.
Yeah, we've got Gideon, Obnix, Sorin, and Lily. It's the Legion of Doom up in here. Wait, no, because there's Gideon. It's the Doom Patrol up in here. Avacyn, Linvala, and Kalitas are the creatures. And then, what the hell is Harsh Scrutiny? Oh my god. Huh. What is this? What's the one that kills a creature from hand? Ostracize? Is that the one I'm thinking of?
Possibly. I get those kind of mixed up because I mostly think of, it's like the Thoughtseize that does this one difference.
Yeah, I always forget, but Harsh Scrutiny is the one that looks at opponent's hand and choose a creature card and they discard it and then you scry one.
Yeah.
And then you've got Transgress, of course, Ruinous Path, Fumigate, Grasp, Blessed Alliance, Anguished Unmaking, Succumb to Temptation, which for 3 mana, draw 2 cards and lose 2 life, but it's instant speed, so they tacked a mana onto it.
Yeah.
One black-black instead of black-black for Sign and Blood. Yeah, it seems fine.
Well, like, Sign and Blood you could also hit your opponent with, couldn't you?
Yeah.
Situationally, you kill them in the funny way.
That is pretty funny when it happens, actually. So that's neat. And then 32nd is another Delirium deck, so yeah.
Wait a minute, did you see the sideboard of the white-black control deck? Check out the last card in the sideboard.
I see a Gonti, Lord of Luxury. Yep.
Wonderful. Aetherborn Rogue.
Wow. Oh, there's a Cambal. I don't know how you pronounce this name. I just like Cambal because it makes him sound like a chump.
I think when I first read it, I read it as Campbell because I like to think that he's wearing a can of soup on his head, but.
Or that he has a really big chin and likes to say groovy.
I could see that too. That would also work.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm just really appreciating the fact that they've got essentially some commander cards in the sideboard over here. Look at those legends. Look at them.
I mean, Campbell, K-Dog is actually pretty good if you're going to run up against, like the spell deck. Oh Lord. Then that means the first thing they're going to do is kill him instead of killing something that matters.
Well, it also means that you've spent one, a white and a black to have your opponent discard a removal spell and drain two, which is reasonable in an attrition fight.
Yeah. So there you go. That's a look at the top 32 of this GP. So there's lots of flash running around, lots of vehicles driving around. Yeah, so look both ways before crossing the street and don't cross Ming the Merciless.
No, that's don't do that.
It's basically what we're saying here.
He'll poke you and it won't be good.
All right then. So how about, where was the SCG open this week?
Milwaukee.
Ah, Milwaukee. We're not worthy. This guy had a party or what?
And for those of you that follow along with the show notes, Star City is doing that thing where it plays audio when you click on the link. So, so be aware of that.
Pause the video right away and move on with your life.
Yeah. Just be aware of that if you're like trying to be sneaky at work or something, which you shouldn't do anyway, but especially then, because that'll be stupid. Like of all the things you get in trouble for, watching Star City recorded coverage is an embarrassing one.
Yeah, so. It is really obnoxious. Like, I'd understand if the tournament was live right now that when you open it, it just starts playing the Twitch stream.
Yeah.
But it's not live right now. This happened this weekend.
Yeah.
And it just picks up somewhere and just starts playing, and I haven't figured out what's going on with that, but be aware.
Yeah.
But let's see here. How many people were in this here thing? I've lost my show notes again. Here they are. Yeah, so the Modern Open is Modern, by the way. Oh, wait, no, we missed the thing. Nah, we'll do later.
Okay, yeah,
we'll do that later. So there were 809 people playing Modern, and Caleb Durward won playing Bant Spirits. Now remember, this is Modern, and Bant Spirits is, well, it's really cool.
Yeah.
It's Bant colored, obviously. It's running a bunch of really cool spirit effects, like, oh, how about your Geist of St. Traft? He's a spirit, don't forget. Spellqueller's a spirit, Selfless Spirit. Oddly enough, is a spirit. Rattle Chains is still around. It gives all your spirits flash. That's good. That's why one of the main reasons it's called a blue-white flash deck in Standard. There's Phantasmal Image, which itself a spirit, but...
It's probably copying one.
It's a two-mana copy of whatever spirit you like.
Well, it's important to note that the Phantasmal Image is in a deck with Drogskull Captain, which was the way Standard was for a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's great.
So you've got your Mausoleum Wanderer, who gets bigger and counters things. And as Bill said, your Drogskull Captain, which pumps all your spirits and gives them a hexproof, because that's totally fair and fine.
Like, it gives your other spirits +1/+1 in hexproof, which is why the Phantasmal Image is amazing, because that means when one comes out and resolves, now both of your captains are covered with hexproof and a pump. And hexproof is wonderful for your illusion, because otherwise it's very unfortunate.
He's not wrong.
Quite fragile.
It's also running, it says Bant, but really it's blue-white. It's got Noble Hierarch, and it's got Collected Company, because basically, yep, everything Coco can grab.
Yep.
So that's the thing. And it's also running Steel of the Godhead, because Steel of the Godhead is hilarious in a deck where lots of things are blue-white.
Yeah, if you actually resolve Steel of Godhead on a Geist of St. Traft, they're pretty much done.
It's pretty close.
It's pretty much over. Like, they're
Steel
going to
of
die.
The Godhead, for those of you who weren't around back then, Steel of the Godhead says, as long as enchanted creature is white, it's an enchant creature, by the way, it gets +1/+1 in lifelink. As long as enchanted creature is blue, it gets +1/+1 and is unblockable. Which means if it's a white-blue creature, it gets +2/+2 lifelink and is unblockable.
Yeah, when you put it on Geist of St. Traft, you actually recreate that limited nightmare of having an Invisible Stalker with a cleaver pretty effectively.
It's pretty close, yeah.
Except only there's also air wings. Support.
Yeah.
It's like an invisible stalker that calls in an air raid every time it runs over to stab you for your life. Terrifying.
Pretty much. Yeah. So that's cool. Good on you, Caleb. Second place is the modern Ad Nauseam deck. You know, the one that runs, well, it's a storm deck. It runs light. It's sort of a storm deck. It's not really a storm deck. It's a lightning storm deck. It runs Ad Nauseam, Phyrexian Unlife, and what's the other one? Angel's Grace to draw the deck and then kill you with a lightning storm. Yeah. Or it's got lightning, Laboratory Maniac as a alternate win condition.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's fun. Looks like it'd be a trip to play once or twice. And then I'd wish.
And then appropriately labeled them when you get through the rest of the day.
Yeah.
Ad Nauseam is a good name for it.
Pretty much. In third place, Kent Ketter is playing the modern Dredge deck, which, yeah, thanks to Cathartic Reunion being printed, has seen a bit of an upswing, because Cathartic Reunion, you know, pay 2 mana, discard 2 cards, draw 3 cards. It's pretty good when you want to dredge.
When you're really dredging, good. Yeah. It's yeah, super that's pretty good. Nice.
Good lord. Hey, Clues.
Oh, yeah.
Can you cast Cathartic Reunion with no cards in your graveyard? Discard Golgari Grave Troll, and then dredge using your three draw, one of your three draws?
I'm sorry, I've got to look at Cathartic Reunion's,
It says, as an additional, oh, you can, because it says as an additional cost to cast it, discard 2 cards. And then it says draw 3 cards. So yeah, you can totally do that.
So it'll be in the yard by the time he gets to that step.
Yeah, you've paid the costs before it begins to resolve. So yes.
Yeah, that seems pretty good. For 2 mana, especially.
You mean you did all that nonsense and you still ended up with actual cards in your hand, possibly too? And they're the cards you wanted? Oh man.
Absolutely. What about Faithless Looting? Because it says draw 2 cards, then discard 2 cards. You can still do that, right?
I mean, you'd be dredging it before you were discarding it, wouldn't you?
Oh wait, yeah, that says draw first. Why does it say draw first? Oh,
because it's red.
It's actually looting.
Yeah, it was before they had rummaging. This is actual looting.
Okay, excuse me. I'm forgetting to read the card. RTFC.
In your defense, this card was previewed by Dak Faden.
I hear he's the greatest thief in the multiverse.
Look, just a man with a man's courage. He knows nothing but a man. But he can never fail.
Okay, anyway, fourth place.
Some people get that, and it's funny.
Okay, so fourth place, Jeremy Jung is playing Scapeshift in Modern.
Sounds like a good idea.
Because that's a thing that you do. Yep.
I mean, but lands are pretty good.
Nothing really fancy going on here. So we'll move on to fifth place. Paul Myers is playing Decepticons, also known as Affinity to you out there who don't have standards. Yeah, I said it. He's running actually 0 cards with Affinity. Hey, look at that. And yet we still call it that.
Well, they call it that.
Sorry, yet they still call it. They don't even call it Affinity for Artifacts. They just call it Affinity. Anyway, James Johnson in 6th place is playing Jeskai. Because it's Modern.
Yeah.
It's Jeskai Flash. But again, pretty normal deck list, I think.
Yeah, I think the...
Yeah.
Like, at this point, we've just accepted that Spell Queller is in every format, right?
Yeah, because it actually is in every format, right?
Yeah.
Maybe not Vintage, but we'll find out later.
Yeah, the next time there's a Vintage tournament we report on, when's that going to happen?
I mean, right? In 7th place, Michael Janney is playing Zoo. And I mean, like, straight Zoo. He's got Curd Apes in the deck, people. This is a Zoo.
I mean, when your aggro curve starts at 0, good times.
Dryad Arbor?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ninja Tree.
And then in 8th place, Jacob Bao is playing Dredge. This one has Scourge Devil, though, which is pretty funny, I guess with Narcomoebas.
I mean, that does sound pretty funny.
And Haunted Dead Tokens, Prized Amalgam, just all that stuff that all pops out of the graveyard and goes, rah!
Yeah.
Pumps them all. Yeah.
Still running that Cathartic Reunion for the reasons you just said.
It's true. I wish I could read. Wow, this would be so much easier if I could read.
Yeah, but, you know, baby steps.
True. Clues, you still alive?
Yeah, sorry. I was reading about a thing and just making sure that it was not necessary for us to review it. Never mind. It's all good. Everything's fine.
Nothing's on fire.
Nothing is on fire. It's all good. That thing that you thought we were going to bring up just a minute ago and we didn't, don't worry. It's probably fine. We don't care.
I mean, we're still bringing it up. We're just going to get through the tournament news first. Unless we're talking about a different thing.
Yeah, we're talking about a different thing.
Oh, okay.
I like how you guys are talking like one of us is wearing a wire. Like everything we're saying is being recorded.
Yeah, look, man.
Isn't it?
If you're the police, tell me, right?
I mean, I never said I wasn't a cop.
Oh my god. Okay, so ow. I seem to have had a cramp. So what's next? It's the Oh no. Oh wait. I accidentally opened the Star City Link again and it was about to start playing.
Ha!
But I stopped it. Okay, anyway, so next up we have Standard again. How many people were playing Standard?
125.
125. Nope, that's Modern. Hang on. Where'd it go? Here we go. Brad Carpenter won with White Blue Flash. Sam Black came in second with White Red Tokens. Really? Yep, that's that deck.
Mm-hmm.
With okay.
Servos.
Cool. Another White Blue Flash, Martin Sandstrom in third. John Matheson playing Black Red Zombies. Is this Black Red Zombie Madness? Yeah, it is. Brain-eating zombie bastards.
Somebody Photoshop that movie poster.
Please, please do. especially with the guy at the GP. Crap, what was his name? Scroll. Jackie Wang? Oh god, yeah, you've gotta make that. Fifth place, Travis Oninsky is playing Mardu Vehicles.
Vroom vroom.
So what's the Mardu Vehicles called? If it's not Road Rage, or is that also
It's still Road Rage.
Okay.
Like, essentially all the vehicle aggro decks I'm calling Road Rage.
Gotcha.
Like, Boros and Mardu are both pretty close on it.
That's true.
I originally came up with different names, but I decided it was better to go with one that people might actually remember.
Abzan.
Abzan Road Rage is a different deck.
Totally, yeah. Sixth place, Corey Green is playing Jeskai Control.
Yeah, Abzan Road Rage is like Rhino Convertibles. It's very different.
Now my head hurts.
Rhinos like and cars getting coffee.
It's like Carpool Lane or something. Good times. No, that'd be Coco. Never mind. Keep moving.
Carpool Tunnel.
Ooh.
I think I have that. Okay. So, right. Corey Green just got control of sixth place. Basically, a variation on the, just got control deck that made the top eight of the Pro Tour, of course. Brad Thiessen playing White Blue Flash. So, doesn't matter how do you pronounce his name. And then, eighth place, Alex Prodol.
Alex
P is playing the green red energy deck that I, we mentioned briefly at the Pro Tour, and in like the top 16 or top 32 decks or whatever.
It's really neat. It's pretty much a block deck if you actually look at the cards.
Well, yeah.
Just why, I mean, it has to be by virtue of being an energy deck, but still,
yeah,
it's kind of funny.
You have stupid amounts of energy, but it's...
Yeah, the only non-block decks are the lands.
Yeah, Game Trail and Cinderglade, yeah. But you gotta get all that energy from somewhere so your electrostatic pummelers can utterly destroy someone.
Good old Gruul Laser.
Pew, pew. Gruul Laser, there's two words that don't go together.
Oh man, I just saw the picture for Nature's Way again. That's still funny for some reason.
Huh. Kitty.
It's a big kitty who's giving you a big hug.
Aw. So let's see, there's something strange here. In ninth place, there's a black-white mid-range deck by Josu Zapata. Oh, I see Noxious Gearhulk, I like it.
Vroom vroom.
No.
It's not really a vroom vroom, it's more of a smog engine.
Thraben Inspector, Archangel Avison, Ailey Eternal Pilgrim. Ooh. Gisela. Kambal. We gotta figure out how to actually pronounce that. Thalia, Gideon, and Lily. And of course, Smuggler's Copter, because it's magic. Anguished Unmaking, Grasp, Declaration, and Stone. or is your removal suite. Wow. That looks like fun.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Zilla has lifelink. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Neat. I like it. All right. Anything else nifty going on here? Bant aggro in 10th. What is this? Vergerous Gearhulk Fairgrounds Warden. Oh, that's the Fiend Hunter dude. Yeah.
Weird for an aggro deck.
Reflector Mage. Spell Queller. I don't know if aggro is quite
the Spell Queller is where I sort of got stuck on it.
But then it does have, like, Tireless Tracker, Sylvan Advocate, Smuggler's Copter, Blossoming Defense.
Like, is it an aggro deck when it's running Tamiyo, though?
It's like value aggro. It's creature-based value deck.
Sure.
It's very... Huh.
Hey, it's got News Constrictor.
Hey, that's the F&M promo for January.
Yeah. Got there.
All right. Blue-Red Emerge, Ricky Life in 12th. What is this? Advanced Stitchwing. Seriously?
Ha.
Stitchwing Scab? Wretched Griff? Okay, that one makes sense. Stitchwing Scab. Oh, yeah, that one. Okay, that seems good. Advanced Stitchwing. Yeah, that seems pretty good, too, I guess.
This is weird. This feels like a theme deck.
Definitely weird. So it's got your two Stitchwings. So, okay. In case you don't draft much, Stitchwing Scab is a 3-1 for 4 with flying that says 1 and a blue and discard 2 cards to bring it from graveyard to battlefield tapped. The Advanced Stitchwing is a 3-4 for 5 with flying that says 2 and a blue, discard 2 cards, come back from graveyard to battlefield tapped. You've also got your Wretched Griff, your Prized Amalgam, and your Elder Deep Fiend. And then Tormenting Voice and Cathartic Reunion to just vomit cards into the graveyard. Kozilek Return, because you want that in the graveyard. Lightning Axe and Fiery Temper. Wow, this is totally a straight up theme deck that just happens to work well enough to get 12th at a standard classic.
Weird.
It's neat though. I'd like to see how it plays. Anyway, that's neither here nor there.
I just want to walk by a table once when someone's actually got some Fevered Visions out, just to watch that game happen. I think it'd actually be interesting in the case of this deck.
I am going to take a moment and send this deck list to Mike. There we go. Okay. I guess that's about it in standard. There's a Grixis Control deck in 16th, but I bet... Yeah, this is totally close enough to the Pro Tour deck that there is nothing to talk about. Okay. Well, yep. That was standard with how many people were playing?
125.
125. So that means Legacy had like 86?
126. Ha ha! Take that, standard. We got the Steve Monarch, to be with us.
The Monarch of all formats.
You won over exactly by one Steve.
One Steve. I actually-
Rule them all and in darkness bind them.
Can somebody find standings and see if they're actually... There had to have been a Steve playing. I don't know if he took the bus there, but maybe he did. You know, so we had...
I'll check it while you talk.
126 players for the king of all formats, Legacies. And since I know it's why you all came here to hear, you want to know, okay, Clues, give it to me straight. Which new cards have made the cut for the top 8? Tell me about all of the Kaladesh cards that are in... The top 8, none. I'm pretty sure it's none. I looked through. I might have missed one. I apologize if I did, but I hope I didn't. So, in first place, Alexander Barnett is playing Alurin, which has seen a resurgence. I'm not really sure why. If someone knows, could they tell us why suddenly we're seeing all these Alurin decks? Because I don't see any new card that suddenly enabled it. Did something get unbanned or banned? Was Alurin banned? No, that can't be right, can it?
Yeah, nothing changed in any recent bannings or unbannings.
Yeah, so I don't know, but there it is. In second place, we had Dave Patwell playing Jeskai Control. And once again, no new cards.
Wah, wah.
At least none that I can find. In third place, Joe Lissette is playing. Anyone? Anyone? That's right. It's Miracles, because it's Joe Lissette. Okay, look. I know that I don't want this to be seen as outside assistance. So if you're listening to this podcast at a tournament, turn this off now. You shouldn't be using electronic devices. But if you sit down at a table playing Legacy, the guy across the table from you introduces himself as Joe Lissette, I'm pretty sure he's on Miracles. Just putting it out there. Also, no new cards. So,
but it does have one of your favorite old cards.
No, it doesn't.
Red Elemental Blast?
Oh, I thought you were talking about that one that I'm trying to get rid of.
Nah, that's not one of your favorites. I'm done pretending that you like those cards.
Okay, thank goodness, because it's totally not true.
Yay, Clues loves Delver. Wait, what?
I wouldn't say that anymore.
In fourth place, Patrick Tilson is playing Death and Taxes. And I think the newest thing here is probably the Recruiter of the Guard.
Yeah.
Which is cool. That was Conspiracy 2, I think, right?
Yeah, Conspiracy Harder.
Conspiracy 2, this time it's personal. That's my understanding. In fifth place, Ty Copeland is playing Reanimator. And here we've got Insolent Neonate, which, as near as I can tell, is there for discarding. So that
that's the only thing he does, so.
Yeah, it's pretty much just, and he's insolent.
Well, I mean, it's a Magic tournament.
Yeah. In sixth place, Dakota Clark is playing Grixis Delver. It's got Zombie Fish. Huh? Huh?
I mean, that helps.
Zombie Fish.
There we go. Also Young Peasy, because I got to get that in there. In seventh place, Forrest Ryan is playing Colorless Eldrazi. Is it a threat or a menace? You decide. Still no new cards.
What about a Scourge?
We'll take judges. Yep, we'll take Scourge.
Yay.
So, control of the board is yours. Would you like to go to eighth place? No?
I don't think he was ready for that.
I don't think he was either. He didn't.
I'm sorry, I'm reading this thing that you were reading earlier.
Okay, yeah, see? So now you understand. Jeremy Barbeau is playing Alurin. We could still use someone to tell us why.
This has not changed in the last few minutes.
Yeah, no one has emailed us while the show was going on. But there you go. And that is your top eight in the King of All formats. Overall, I think it looks pretty good. A couple of, let's see, Delver, looks pretty healthy overall. Looking out beyond eighth place, we've got some more Death and Taxes. There's a Slivers deck out in 12th.
Huh? What?
Yeah. Check it, yo. Slivers. Xander Niazi is playing Slivers, and it has, wait for it, Slivers in it.
I was actually waiting for you to say, no new cards from the current set.
Also, there are none of the new Slivers made the cut. They just weren't good enough.
That's really sad.
The Kaladesh Slivers?
The Kaladesh Slivers. Not a single Kaladesh Sliver to be found.
Oh, man. But they're such an artistic bunch.
Although there are phantasmal images. I guess that's cool. And out in 14th place, we do have elves. Eh? You like elves? I like elves. I'm sorry.
Did any of the new elves make it?
Looking like no.
Are there new elves?
Strangely, none of the dwarves from Kaladesh made it into the elves deck.
Oh, man. That's unfortunate.
And unsurprising.
I mean, it's just weird that you said the phrase new dwarves. I mean, we're still getting used to that.
We are. It is kind of weird and or trippy, let's say.
Hey, are we done with tournaments?
Yeah. I think we're done with tournaments.
Well, not quite.
We aren't.
Shall we return to Providence?
Yeah, we have to go back to Providence for a second.
Okay.
Oh, man, these return sets are coming too frequently. We need new places.
So, the other thing that happened at Providence that I figured that Clues would want to weigh in on is the disqualification of one Oliver Two. And according to the press release here on the WotC website, he was disqualified for bribery. Now, the official statement I'm not going to read out loud, but from reading this, what it sounds like is that, now you guys tell me if I'm wrong here.
Yep.
It sounds like Oliver 2 really wanted that pro point.
Yep.
So therefore he really needed to finish, high. Now this is round 15, so there's another round to go, right? There's 16 rounds. Now this says he was disqualified for bribery at the end of round 15. So I'm guessing this happened in round 15 would be my guess. So his opponent, he really, he made it clear he really wanted the pro point, more so than the prize money. And his opponent conceded to him, mind you, round 15, so still another round to go.
I've just pulled up the event, and there were only 15 rounds before the top 8.
Oh! Are there only 15 rounds of a GP now? Excuse me, am I stupid?
I think it depends on the number of people still, doesn't it?
No, I thought they changed it so it no longer did depend on the... Maybe they changed the thresholds.
Whatever the case, I've just pulled up the listings from the event, and they got to 15 for pairings, results, and standings, so I'm assuming there wasn't 16.
Whoops. Okay, so excuse me then. There are 15 rounds. It's entirely possible that there are always 15 rounds. We don't go to GPs, and we don't pay that much attention because number of rounds don't matter. Okay, so this is the last round. I'm guessing that this would get him into the top 8, or at least high enough to get a pro point, or at least an extra pro point or something. And so, again, based off the statement from the head judge, here's what I took from it. You guys, please tell me if I'm wrong. He wanted the pro point.
Yeah.
And so he got his opponent to concede to him, but it seems like he offered to split the prize with him.
I think that might be a little strongly worded, what you just said there. I don't think we... None of us were there. Okay, step one. None of us were there. We did not witness this. We have no further knowledge other than this statement. Number two, there is an active investigation going on, so conjecture on our part is discouraged.
Right. This is complete... I was telling you what I got out of it so that you could then go into...
Yeah. So, here's the thing, okay? Bribery. Don't. I know that's not a very satisfying way to...
There really isn't a gray area.
Yeah. So here's the thing. Here's what we want. We want every game of Magic to be decided by, wait for it, playing Magic. That's what we want. Okay. And in fact, WotC is purposefully toying around with tournament structure to incentivize never drawing or any of that kind of stuff. So, concessions are weird. Okay. So the official definition of bribery from the Magic Infraction Procedure Guide that your judges are going by when they're making a decision here. A player offers an incentive to entice an opponent into conceding, drawing, or changing the results of a match, or accept such an offer. Okay, there's some more detailed notes elsewhere, but that's really it right there. Okay, so that when we say offers an incentive, okay, we're not trying to encourage you to try and skirt the rules somehow. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. I'm not telling you I'm going to give you $50, but do you want to concede to me? Okay, see, that's still bribery.
Yeah,
I don't know what happened.
There's not a tricky secret wording you can do that makes it not bribery.
Yeah.
It's the action and the intended outcome that does it.
Right. It's the intent here. It's not, again, there are no magic words to make it. You can't call over a judge and say, hey, judge, since you're standing right here, can I offer my opponent $50 to concede to me? And the judge will go, no. And, that act right there is essentially informing your opponent, hey, I want to give you $50 if you'll concede to me. Okay. See, don't that thing that you just did right there? Yeah. That's bribery too. So look, just don't. How about you just play Magic?
Lame.
I know. I mean, if you want your opponent to concede to you, you can sit down and go, would you concede to me? And they'll go, no. And then you play Magic. Ta-da.
Yeah. There really isn't a complex discussion to be had here. And yeah, that's what Glues is getting at. Like don't do it.
There's not a complex discussion to be had about whether or not you should engage in bribery. That's easy.
Yes.
Because
right.
No. Now, the complex discussion here is more of, was he actually trying to bribe his opponent? Or did they just, like, is he just dumb and worded things improperly and it ended up falling under bribery?
So, one of the things that it says here, and like, directly in the article that we linked to, it says that, you know, as part of, you know, the investigation, the players were interviewed separately. Each gave a version of the conversation that didn't match. That's really important. Regardless of what happened, when you pull two people apart and they tell different stories, red flags are going to be flying everywhere. Because under normal conversation, that's not going to happen. And following that, in the case of the person who was later disqualified, his narrative said he began, like, according to this narrative, in the narrative, he had begun the conversation by establishing that he was interested in the pro point while his opponent was not. He then asked the opponent for a prize split. See that part? Asked for a prize split. That's where it happens. You can't pursue a result via compensation, no matter what it is, no matter if it's like the normal thing that you would get for winning versus losing and any of that. Like, you are saying, I want this result. Here's what would happen to get to my result, and you get this thing for it.
That's weird, because it sounds like that's exactly what I led off with, and you guys told me that that was a bit much.
Well, no, what I said was none of us were there, and we can't really comment on this particular incident.
Like, all I can comment on is the text that's right here.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you were doing too, Joey. And so, like, based exactly on the text that we have, I mean, obviously we weren't there. We didn't hear it. There's an investigation. They're going to handle that themselves. But based on the disclosed information and assuming that that is accurate, yeah, that's the way we have to take it. Clues is going to remind you that because we weren't there, we can't make any definite statements, so we can only make assumptions based on the text that we're given. And even then, it's not really our place because we don't have as much information as the people ultimately making the decision.
Well, to be honest with you, I'm saying you guys can do whatever you want, but I'm a judge, so I don't comment on ongoing investigations.
Oh, in that case, potatoes are delicious.
I mean, that's demonstrably true.
In that case, I think that Oliver, too, is a spy sent here by Ming the Merciless.
I did not expect that.
And that's why he got DQ.
I did not expect that at all.
But yeah, so, okay.
Is that slander?
Coming at it from the perspective of the average everyday person reading this, what I took away was Oliver 2 said, hey, concede to me because I want the point and I'll split the prize with you, which you can't do. Now, whether that's actually what was said or not, that's what I took away from it, which means that's what at least some number of people reading this took away from it, because I am a fairly average individual.
My advice is, when in doubt, why don't you play Magic? I know there are going to be players who are in situations where they're like, yeah, that's dumb. I want to try and game this as much as possible. Look, why don't you just play Magic, man?
I mean, you've already made it through 14 rounds. What the hell's one more?
Yeah.
Like, if your life savings depends on your winning in, then you probably made poor decisions along the way, and it's not going to help you now. Just saying. So, that's a thing, but as a public service announcement, we had to explain why you should not attempt to bribe your opponent, even if you don't think it's bribery. Yeah, that's bribery, turns out. How about that? But whatever. Things happen, and then we tell you about them, and then we go to talk about other things.
That does sound like us.
Yeah. So, there is one more thing that happened. It's the Bazaar of Moxen Legacy and Vintage Championships. Clues, you want to do anything quickly with that?
Some vintage happened. Let me start there. Decks won.
Hang on, I'm going to look for Spellqueller.
I don't know a thing about vintage, okay?
Ooh, there are no Spellquellers in the top 8 of the vintage champs. So,
all right, great.
Maybe it's not played in every format, just most of them. Every real format.
Hey, there's a car here.
There.
Is it the Lightning? Or no, crap.
The Cruiser.
Fleet Wheel Cruiser, yeah.
Yeah.
Fleetwood Mac?
So Fleetwood Cruiser and Sky Sovereign Console Flagship made their way into the second place deck, Car Shops.
Yeah, and this, we've talked about this somewhere.
I feel like we did, yeah.
Yeah, we mentioned it for a second. Oh, last week, because the legacy lists were nowhere to be found, but the vintage ones were there. And we pointed out that, yeah, when you've got things like Ancient Tomb and Mishra's Workshop, then swinging for 5 or lightning bolting something seems pretty good.
Yeah.
And what do you know? It does. Hey.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's...
I think
Mentor Control 1 Wait, is this the same one we talked about last week? No, it can't be because this happened yesterday. Okay, never mind.
Time travel.
It was a Pime paradox. So what about Legacy here,
Cleveland? It's also the time. It's also the one that we will talk about again next week.
Whoa.
There was some dual commander, not commenting on that, except to say that it happened.
Yeah.
So there you go. Then there was old school vintage.
Sorry?
Yeah, I feel like old school vintage is...
Oh, yeah.
It's a version of vintage, but you can only play sets up to a certain point.
Yeah, old school magic is playing... You can only play with decks...
It's like anti-standard.
Oh, crap. It's only play with decks up to... I can't remember where the cutoff point is. But yeah, it's something like that. And apparently it's popular enough to have its own... Its own format at the,
Alright, I'm gonna read off the names of some of the decks in old school vintage. You ready? First place, the deck. Second place, the deck. Third place, the deck.
I've always hated that deck name.
Fourth place, the deck. Fifth place, the deck. Still fifth place?
Well, it's got fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth all listed as a chunk.
Oh, okay. All right. There we go. Then Reanimator, then the deck. I think the deck was popular.
Yeah. Now,
yes, the deck is an actual deck.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know, the deck actually was one of the early competitive Magic decks that actually used philosophies that we still use today. It just had a lot of crappier cards, but it also had a lot of powerful cards.
I was gonna say it also had Moxen, so
that makes a lot of decks better.
Yeah, and Stripmine, kind of good.
Yeah, but kinda. I mean, it's also running JMD Tome and
Jusum Jin.
Stone Rain is actually really good in formats that have Library of Alexandria and whatnot, so that's good. Are there Jusums? There aren't always Jusums.
No, but in the last place, the deck.
Oh, okay,
there is. It's one copy.
Yeah, like in the first place deck, the first place version of the deck, this looks very much, like the original. Not exactly, but it's like the two Sarah Angel as the main, win condition. Yep. Wait, there's Brain Geyser. Yep. Yeah. So if you can find some way to Google it without getting everything, then you should look up the deck.
I would say Magic Vintage the deck. You'll probably get there. Maybe the Gathering.
I mean, there was no such thing as vintage back then, though.
Yeah, but if you find the vintage, the deck, you'll probably find an article that explains what the deck is.
That's possible, yeah. So there you go.
I have confidence, because the vintage folks, they keep track of these sorts of things. And
yeah, they do.
If you've never actually interacted with a vintage player, if it's just something you've only ever heard about on a podcast, they're pretty chill overall. They're cool. They know what they're doing. They're comfortable with their rather niche format, but, you know, they like to talk about it, so I'm sure you can find a vintage player today and ask them about the deck. I'm gonna say you'll be glad you did, but I don't know, your results may vary. In Legacy, though, because a Legacy event did happen as well, I'm just gonna read off the decks that did well, so we'll just give you the top 8 decks here. I don't have any numbers on how many people attended this, so take from it what you will.
I don't even know where this happened. It happened in Eternal Weekend, and is the European Eternal Weekend. Oh, it's in Paris. Here it is.
I was going to say
that's 2017.
It was certainly in Europe. That's everything I've got for you.
It totally was straight up.
Yeah. In the Legacies, first place was taken by Reanimator. Second place was Four Colored Delver. In third place, Miracles. Fourth place, more four-colored Delver. Fifth place, Death and Taxes. Sixth place, more Miracles. Seventh place, yet more Miracles. Oh, eighth place, Elves. Thank you. There we go. So it was not a complete and total loss. There were too many Miracles. There were three too many Miracles. Stop the top. Hashtag. But there is an Elves to round out the top 8. So there you go. There's the European Legacy scene.
It looks like it was also in Paris because the address is on the left.
Hey, it is.
Okay. Weekend. Okay, there it is. Yay. I was looking up here at the others. Because it just says Eternal Weekend, where the at the very top left.
Yeah.
Eternal Weekend, 21 to 23rd. That's all it says. Anyway. So yay, there you go. There's your Eternal whatever. Yeah. So Clues is going to step away for a moment and we are going to talk about Commander because that's the other thing that's going on right now.
Yeah. Cause that's something that is a lot more relevant to a lot of people than European Eternal formats.
It's very true.
So, hey, look, Commander, it's the new year, a new Commander set, a new $150 to $180 to spend.
Yay. Good thing I got out of that habit.
Yeah, me too. I used to collect all of these so hard and I really love looking forward to them, but about the point I have, you know, like 20 Commander decks, I'm like, I'm good, but I'm really glad they're still making them. And
oh, yeah.
The mechanics are cool to see every time and mechanics are what we have now.
Yeah, so a thing that the Commander sets like to do is they like to tweak things that are special to the format. You know, like tweaking, getting your Commander from the command zone or things like that. And so a big thing with Commander is multiplayer. So there's a new mechanic called Undaunted, where this spell costs one less to cast for each opponent. So if you're playing by yourself, then Sublime Exhalation costs 6 and a white. If you're playing one-on-one, it costs 5 and a white. And if you're playing a four-player game, then it costs, so it costs 3 and a white, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's, and it says destroy all creatures as a sorcery. So that's good.
Which also means that as the game goes on and people are eliminated, your spells cost more. It's kind of funny. But on the same note, by the point people are eliminated in a commander game, you probably have more mana than you can reasonably use. So it's actually a really neat way to introduce a mechanic that will effectively mean that if you end up pulling it over into like Legacy, then the spells cost one less. That's easy to remember. It's pretty straightforward. I mean, it doesn't make them, you know, extremely competitive, but it's something that very easily flows into other decks without being weird and specifically tied to the commander format.
Yeah, and they didn't make it cost 5 and a white, and Undaunted says the spell costs one less to cast for each opponent beyond the first.
Yeah, they wanted it clean. And I appreciate this. Just remember it when you're playing with it in a normal deck or when you're down to just one-on-one at the end of the game. It's still one less than what's printed on it.
Yeah. Although the converted mana cost is still 7, so correct. There you go.
So have fun with that, you cascading jerks.
Pretty much. The other thing, they're bringing back basic land cycling on new cards.
Basic land cycling was really helpful when we were running around in original Alara. When we made it to Conflux and we desperately needed our 5-color decks. So because the gimmick of this commander set is going 4 colors, basic land cycling makes perfect sense.
Yeah, it does. And then the big thing that actually messes with the rules of commander is an ability called Partner.
Partner?
Where these legendary creatures that can be your commander, some of them have Partner. And Partner says, you can have 2 commanders if both have Partner. Because the gimmick on this one, like Bill just said, is 4 colors. The problem is making 4-color creatures that don't suck is really hard.
Yeah, the reasoning why you don't see them pretty much ever, like with the one exception of the Nephilim at this point, is that it's really hard to make a card that exemplifies 4 colors of magic without just being a 5-color card. Like, then it's entirely defined by the one thing that it can't do, and that's hard to fit into one card. It doesn't give it a lot of mechanical identity, and it's just not very compelling, because it also means that you have to start the curve at 4, minimum, and that's pretty rough. Now, there's an article that we're not really going to throw at you too much, but if you care about it, going into a little bit more of the philosophy about how they handle this, with building the set, but the main thing was this mechanic allows them to kind of get around that. So rather than printing a number of cycles, like normally in a commander set, you get what, like 3 main options for your commander. That's how it was in the earlier ones. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it'd be like, you know, well, here are the allied color ones, like the ally shards. You'd have 3 options to pick from or 3 wedge options or whatever. And in the case of this one, rather than having to come up with 4 colored cards for every combination, they sort of did a split thing where now you can do your partner double commander thing to fill out, you know, all the colors but one. Because each of these, I believe, is just a 2-color card, right? At least that we've seen.
I mean, the 2 in this article are.
Yeah.
I
So
I would assume that they'll just be a bunch of two-colored commanders that have partner.
Yeah, it seems pretty likely because they give you some flexibility. It also plays a lot better when you start mixing them up with other sets. Like, if you split these out and you have these two colors that are, you know, like for instance, the example here, we have a black-blue partner command legendary creature and we have a red-white, you know, partner legendary creature. But if you were to take this commander set or whatever box that would come in another one, you can swap them around and still have four color combinations. So you can mix and match them between each other. And that gives a little more, because otherwise if they're actually four colors, they can only ever live in exactly that deck. So.
That is true. Yeah. So like you can take Silas Wren, your blue black one here, and just assuming that there's, I don't know, like a black green commander with partner in a different deck. Well, you can put them as your two partner commanders and have a three color deck.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have to go four colors. I'm sure that they had to make some overlap on these. So it's more flexibility in deck building. And if you want, you can run Silas Wren as your commander by himself and just have a blue black deck.
Yeah. There's no requirement for them to have partners. Now, the one main limit is that both of the commanders have to have the, you know, word partner on them. Like, so you can't just be like, oh, cool, I can just pair this with one of your existing decks, because it won't work. There are some limitations in that respect. There will be a finite number of combinations that you can do among the ones in these sets. But it's an interesting area to explore because it lets you have the benefit of having access to more colors in your deck's color identity without having to find something that's exactly those colors for your commander. And also, one of the things that's sort of weird about it is that when you only have one commander, it's pretty easy to keep track of, okay, well, I've cast it twice, so it costs, you know, four extra this next time when I cast it. But for your two partner commanders, you keep track of them separately. And so you'll want to remember that. You're probably not going to remember this off the top of your head. You should definitely keep track of that with paper or die or something, because it's going to get more complicated over the course of a long commander. For the most part, everything works the way you would think it would, though. It's very straightforward once you acknowledge, I just happen to have two commanders, and they each do their own thing.
Yeah, commander damage works the same way. So if you have these two as your two commanders, and you deal 20 damage with the white-red one and one with the blue-black one, well, you're not done yet.
Yeah. It's the same reason why if your two different opponents hit you with commanders, and between them they would have enough damage to kill you, but because they're separate, they don't.
Exactly.
I mean, so I think
there you go.
It's a pretty quick and clean thing once you wrap your head around the idea of I just happen to have two commanders. And I think that we'll probably see a little bit of fun coming out of it when people do pick up all five of these and start mixing and matching them in other combinations that we might not have initially thought of. So that'll be fun.
It is pretty cool.
I kind of am looking to see if maybe because commander is a format that people treat very informally a lot of the time, if people start, you know, coming up with like either flavor or just like general mechanical justifications for pretending that other cards have partner, like, you know, if someone decides, well, I'm just going to have the Brother Yamazaki as my two commanders or things like that. Like, I mean, I can see there being a lot of very casual, like not by the book, you know, fun flavor pairings. Like I want to have the two versions of Kamal as my commander. Or I'm going to have, like, the Akroma team. Like, first of all, you'd be scary. But second, I think there's a lot of fun to play with there. And these cards are built for it, and these are the ones where you're going to be allowed to do that when you sit down at a store with, like, you know, total strangers. But I think there's some interesting space now that we have rules for it, and I'd like to see what people come up with in that respect. Because for me, I want there to be a flavor justification. I don't want it to just be... And then I have, you know, these neat things over here. They're two really good things. They made a cool, awesome combo deck. No. But if you come up with a fun combination that works really well flavorfully, yeah, tell me on Twitter. It'd be fun. I'm curious. I think Planar Chaos in particular gives you a lot of funny options there, too. Here are the two versions of Miri, and they're going to come get you. It's going to be great.
I mean, both versions of Miri are pretty good, so.
Yeah. Like, here are the... You know, like the OG Mirrodin and the horrified, scary Mirrodin versions of the main character, whose name I'm blanking on now that I started the sentence.
Glissa.
Yeah, Glissa. Like, if you have both Glissas, that'd be really weird, and they'd also play in a funny way together. So there's options there, and I'm curious. Like, let me know what you come up with. And then, you know, if you try playing it like that, since we have rules for it, let me know if it actually turns out to be busted or not, because that might be a good way to make Commander a little more interesting in the casual scene if it just becomes a thing of partner Commander. We will do nothing if not innovate weird ways to play with our cards.
Nice.
Yeah. And that's really it. Like, they don't have more new mechanics this go around.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, this, we're just looking at the Commander 2016 mechanics article.
Mm-hmm.
To my knowledge, the card image gallery isn't up yet. It should go up tomorrow.
They usually wait a day, yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. I'm sure we'll talk about some of the nifty stuff when we see it once the whole set is out, which should be next Monday, right? I mean, I think they'll release, I think there's just the 1 week of previews.
Yeah, for supplemental products, they usually get those all out in a week. It's not like it's a big set coming out.
Yeah.
And they'll obviously want to get it out before it goes on sale, so we should hear that pretty soon.
So there you go.
And if you want to know what the box is going to look like, we have exactly the box.
Yeah, it's the strangest article.
Yeah, they've done the thing that they normally do where they're like, and here's what the product looks like, where you can look at all these generic-looking Commander boxes because, oh, look, there's one that has these four colors, and there's one that has those four colors. And you know how many combinations there are of all but one color? 5.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that turns out to be what they did. And so that's all we have because they didn't include the actual, you know, front of the, like, oversized front of the pack cards here.
For the record, they have really weird names.
They do. So I guess we could read the names. Like, that's admittedly the only actual information here.
Like, the very first one, the non-red one, is called Breed Lethality.
It's like a metal album.
Yeah. Clues' favorite one is the non-blue one, and it's called Open Hostility.
Like a metal album.
Yeah. The non-black one is called Stalwart Unity.
Like a boring metal album.
Well, that's like a Christian metal album, right? Stalwart Unity? Yeah, totally.
I said what I said.
The non-white one is called Entropic Uprising.
Now that one, yeah, that's definitely a metal album. That's like Metalocalypse right there. That sounds great.
Oh, straight up, yeah.
Entropic Uprising. It'd be great.
Brendan Smalls, get on that. And then the non-green one is called Invent Superiority.
That's like the nerdcore cover of a metal band.
Nice.
Well, we've determined the naming scheme now. We got this down.
Oh, wait a minute. Which one was the lame? Oh, the non-black one. Of course, the non-black
one. Yeah, the one that's the least metal of them all.
Of course, yeah.
It's like the other four are like straight out of Scandinavia or something. And then this one's out of like Boise. It's just completely different.
All right then. So that was Commander. A little bit we're going to talk about.
Yeah, give it some standard time. We'll have more.
Standard is back to 1 a year rotation.
Yeah, sure did.
Hey, Noose Constrictor is the FNM promo for January.
Which was the important news.
It was the lead story.
Ah! Hey, Clues is back.
Yeah, sorry about that.
When you summon Noose Constrictor, you summon Clues. That's how it works.
Apparently, that's a good point.
My sincere apologies for not weighing in on Commander, but I got a phone call. I'm sorry. I had to take it. It was my mom. You should call your mom. She wants to talk to you.
I talked to mom earlier.
Oh, great. Next time you talk to mom, I was going to say, you tell her I said hi.
It's weird. Every time that I mention Monday Night Magic, she's like, well, tell Clues I said hi. She never says tell Bill I said hi.
That's fair, I guess. That's fine.
But I don't think she understands the coming back every upkeep thing. I don't think it.
No, I get it.
Pretty sure you're just dead in her eye.
I mean, you know, that's fair. I understand. It is the goblin way.
So Clues, did you have a joke for the four color commander?
I did. So I know you guys were talking about it while I was gone, but, they showed us the packaging of the four color commander decks, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And yet, if you look at the packaging, all the commanders are blocked out.
Right.
So I'm pretty sure I know why they did that. It was so they could demonstrate to us which four color combinations they have.
Okay.
Yep. There you go. That's why they did it. So they could show you which of the 5 different four color combinations they used with these 5 decks.
Yeah, we actually also went over while you were away for a second that it turns out they're all named after weird metal band songs.
Oh.
And the one that doesn't have black is the lame one.
Lethality, yeah. Open Hostility, yes. Mm-hmm. Stalwart Unity.
See?
We decided that was like the Christian metal one out of Boise, Idaho.
Oh! Oh, yes, it totally is. No doubt.
But it's the one that doesn't have black in it, so it's not metal, really.
Yeah, not really. It's certainly no baby metal, let's be clear.
Oh, man. Nothing is baby metal but baby metal.
That's right.
So, that's the that's all
that
the
puts
news
me in a better
for...
mood already.
Hooray! Success! I'm helping.
So that's all the news for the news. So now we go to the Modo news.
Yeah, sure. So Magic Online, the usual rule applies, which is that most of the news comes out Tuesday, Wednesday. I'd share this news with you the following Monday when most of it's no longer relevant. If you want to keep up with this stuff in more real time, go to the Wizards website, then go to products and Magic Online, and then read the articles there. Because I assure you, most of the stuff on my list is no longer relevant by the time you get it. For example, today was the last day if you wanted to vote for You Make the Cube, so hope you voted if you cared. I mentioned it last week, so you had a week's notice. The Pro Tour Gauntlet, you know, running all those decks that you just saw on the Pro Tour, will be running through this Wednesday before it goes away. That's the pretty typical experience of, hey, I want to play with those new cards, but I don't have them yet. So that's a good way to do it. From the Vault lore is now available in the Magic Online store. You guys remember that?
I do. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you want to get in on that From the Vault lore, I recommend hurrying up because it won't be available after January 4, 2017. So you've only got a few months to do that. Also note that the online one does not include a Merit Lage token because we don't get tokens in Magic Online. They are generated by whatever causes them to exist.
Womp womp.
You get no promo token.
Magic? Sorcery. No, wait. That has... I'm trying to think of something that involves magical things that isn't already part of...
Part of the lore in the lexicon?
Yeah. What?
Hocus Pocus!
Got it.
Yes, yeah.
What is the thing that Harry Dresden does? Invocation? There we go.
Like evocation?
Evocation, that's the one.
Yeah. There we go.
That's where tokens come
from. No, we have invoke. It's different. We're good.
Yeah, it's totally different. Yeah.
I really hated evoke and invoke. That was so dumb.
We invoke prejudice at Magic, so.
Do we?
Well, there was a card called.
Yeah. Such wonderful naming on that one.
And also, witch hunts are a thing. I mean, there's one going on right now, so.
Yeah.
Everybody calm down. Just one? Please, everybody calm down.
Whoa, you just roboted like crazy.
Beep. Who did?
Well, that was way less crazy than I expected, but we're good. All right. So, like, other things of relevant quickie Magic Online news. There is an extended downtime the coming week on October 26th, so things will be down for about 3 hours, I think. Like, those tend to go a little bit longer. Just be aware that that's coming up. Party on, because it's going to be the last downtime you're going to get for a while. The only downtime you're going to see in November is on November 16th. So if you're planning on doing any redemptions, then you'll want to get those in advance because otherwise you'll have to wait till December, you know, in case you're deciding you want to cash in that set before the holidays. So be aware of that. Other things. So we got a bug blog update because, you know, we haven't talked about everything and how funny it is when it breaks in a bit. So there's a few new issues. I'm going to try not to go through all of them. But some of them are weird interactions that are always fun to talk about. So, for instance, dispatch, which is a tap spell, like we dispatch, tap it. But if you have Metalcraft, you exile it instead. Yeah, which is why it was their attempt at doing a fixed, you know, Swords to Plowshares variant. Dispatch does not exile the creature it targets when its Metalcraft condition is met. That sucks. So
that's the worst.
Yeah, that is completely ruined the point of it. So be aware that that is presently broken. So here's some other fun stuff going on with some of the new mechanics. So in some rare cases, players who have spent all their gained energy are not seeing the energy tracker reappear after gaining further energy. Now, in Magic Online, it's going to track your energy for you. It's going to show you. Apparently, there's a bug where when you've used all of it, you don't get to see it anymore. Still there, but you can't see it. So I hope you're paying attention. You might want to, as weird as it is, play with a die nearby. Or Notepad, if you happen to run into these rare problems.
Yeah, I mean, that's how energy works in paper.
Yeah.
So it's just working as intended, right?
Yeah, clearly. They are mimicking the real magic experience.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. You remember earlier when we were talking about Gonti, the Lord of Luxury, and his ridiculous wall of text?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to read you that so that you remember it. So when, you know, Lord of Luxury enters the battlefield, look at the top four cards of target opponent's library, exile one of them face down, then put the rest on the bottom of that library in random order. For as long as that card remains exiled, you may look at it, because it's face down, you may cast it, and you may spend mana as though it were mana of any type to cast it. Mm-hmm. So, neat. Well, right now, lands that are exiled by that ability are exiled face up. So your opponent knows exactly what card you have and that it's a land and that they don't have to play around removal or counter spells or any of that nonsense. So that's kind of terrible. I mean, mind you, if you're picking a land out of the top four, you're probably already having a bad day, but this is even worse. So know that circumstance is going on.
So now that's insult to injury. So you completely whiffed. You got a land, and now your opponent knows it.
You can't even bluff that it's relevant. Yeah, it's very sad. All right, so let's see. We're working our way around. Chandra, Torture Defiance, with the four main abilities, which are so awesome. That first ability is the one where you get, like, the sort of card draw-y type effect, where, you know, exile the top card of your library. You may cast that card. If you don't, Chandra deals 2 damage to each opponent. Well, cards exiled by the first ability cannot be cast using alternate calls such as Emerge, which may matter for some cards because, like, you're totally allowed to just cast it, but you can't use some of the extra stuff. May matter depending on the build of your deck. So, that is sad. The one other one that I'll talk about is that one of my favorite cards from the pre-release, the Lothnu Hellion, which is the 2 and a red 4/4 with haste, who comes in with 2 energy, and you have to sacrifice it at your end step if you don't pay 2 energy. That card's a lot of fun to play with, and it's awesome. Well, an issue occurs when you're casting it, and it triggers one of your own optional effects upon entering the battlefield, and then you select not to use that effect. It's weird phrasing there. So in the event that you've cast it, and it triggers an optional effect, and you choose not to do that optional effect, something in the coding of the game then doesn't give you the option to pay for the Hellion at the end of the turn, which is very sad. So somehow those wires get crossed and it doesn't let you pay to keep it, meaning it presumably dies and you can't do anything about it. So,
but my poor Hellion.
I know. Like that giant, scary, really efficient worm is just going to die and you only get 1 swing out of it. And that's lame because you're supposed to get at least 2. So,
but I love my Hellion. I named him Steve after Steve.
After Steve, yeah. And so you'll have Steve for, you know, the turn when you attack with Steve with haste, and then Steve will die, no matter what.
Boo.
Yeah, it's pretty
Sorry,
terrible.
Sorry, Steve.
You named it, you knew what this was. And those are the main new ones. Like, there's a few other things that just have weird quirks to them, but those are the big interesting ones. In fact, just to name the last or name the other one that actually has mechanical relevance right now. Hunger the Owl Pack and Might Beyond Reason, which are the ones where you, like, put some counters on stuff. And unfortunately, right now, they're not placing counters on the creature. So that's a problem. Yeah. Just be aware that those cards effectively don't work. So, sucks. But yeah, there's some more stuff here. Go look at the list. Keep an eye on the ongoing list. Be aware of what does and doesn't work right now. I would wager that most of this will probably be fixed this week in the extended downtime since, you know, they don't take downtimes as often and they can only fix these things during downtime. And so a lot of those are probably simple code issues that just need to be fixed. Be aware of them for now. Keep an eye on the list to see when things are fixed. Just so you know, in the meantime, obviously don't take advantage of them. I don't think any of these you can take advantage of. They're all drawbacks. But just know that they're a thing because it's a lot harder to get reimbursements on known issues. Especially if, you know, they've been around long enough for you to have, should have known better. So just be aware. And finally, in Magic Online news, we're going back to the year modern because the pre-release stuff is over. So yay, let's go to Innistrad, guys. It's Halloween.
But we're going to Innistrad the first time, which was awesome.
Yeah, it's original Innistrad, like straight
except
up.
Except for the Invisible Stalker with a Butcher's Cleaver, but other than that, it was awesome.
Yeah, other than that, it was great. Like the only negative things I have to say about Innistrad, like limited at all, were, yes, that thing about the Invisible Cleaver. That was bad. The unfortunate times when you have to mulligan and you don't have a quick start and you're just completely run over by werewolves, that's a miserable experience.
Oh, because you miss playing a spell, all of their cheap werewolves flip for free, and then you die.
And then if you can't cast one spell, you probably can't cast two spells to flip them back.
Yep.
So you tend to die.
Bad.
Yeah. And finally, like, I was personally annoyed by the fact that the set had like 10 or 11 rare lands, and I had the amazing ability to get three lands in my draft packs on several occasions. So I was effectively playing without rares. And that said, it's such a good set with such deep strategy to it that if you don't have your lands, that's fine. You can play an amazing game of Magic. You can still go through. You can work around it. They bring it back so often that I don't really have too much to say about it that we probably haven't talked about the last few times. But, you know, it's Halloween week. Just, you know, if you haven't played Innistrad, you should definitely play it. If you've only played the new Innistrad, you should play the old one to get a sense of what some of the throwbacks are in the new set.
Yeah.
And if you just like drafting, you're probably going to play it anyway because it's really good. If you've never seen it at all and you want to see an example of a set that has really interesting archetypes, spend a few minutes and look up the spider spawning deck and then find out that that is a thing that people could consistently get in limited. It's crazy.
And then throw a rock at BDM.
Yeah, and then throw
like
a rock at
digital. A digital rock. Don't actually throw a rock at BDM. He's a pretty nice guy.
Yeah, that'd be mean. Yeah. So, but yeah, like that's pretty much what's up in the world of Magic Online. And so, Magic Online over.
Yay!
Hooray! We got there.
So that means M&M over.
Hooray!
Yay!
It's so sad.
Oh. So how about we wrap it up, gentlemen, and you guys, and me. There are no gentlemen here. Clues.
Only Zool.
Yeah.
Oh, man, you guys are tired of that. Was funny. All right. Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter at SqueeGoblinAbob. There's no I in Goblin because, well, let's go with this week. It was trapped in the commander packaging and could not escape because it was sealed in and it couldn't see anything. It's a very dark and sad place. But in a few weeks, when people tear open those things, it'll pop out, and it might have a partner. Who knows? Could be neat. So that's where the eye's at right now. But, yeah, you can follow me on Twitter. Like I said before, let me know if you come up with neat, like, unofficial partner things that make sense flavor-wise or fun-wise. Like, you know, tell me the gimmicks. I'm really curious. I think that's a lot of fun, and that might be a fun thing to do on the side. So talk to me about that. I recently did the convention that I've been talking about for a while. It was a lot of fun at Cosplay America. I have now got a picture of a guy in like an 8 or 9 foot tall Gundam wingsuit with a very tiny teacup and his pinky out because that's what cosplay life is. And it's very majestic. And so like, I definitely recommend going to conventions if you ever get a chance. You don't have to go all in on the costumes or any of that stuff, but if you can have a chance to go for the experience, it's really weird and it's a lot of fun. It's kind of like the small part of going to like the GPs where you see a few cosplayers over in the corner having fun. Only most of the people are over in all the corners having fun. Like that's just a bigger focus. It's not like tournament stress. It's a lot of fun. I even did an episode of Enchant World about the fun of conventions, which even though I haven't really put out an lot of Enchant World content, I would recommend going back and listening to that where I was talking with Christine Sprankel, and it'll give you a good sense of what these things are like. Now, because this convention is behind me and I'm not devoting pretty much all of my free minutes outside of work to it, I can finally go back and follow up on some of the interviews that I had people on standby for, and I'm going to try to put out some new content for Enchant World. I know that I've said that a million times, so we'll see if it happens this time, but I'm hopeful. And when I have that happen, I'll let you know here. And so that said, if you want to check out the episode I just mentioned, go to enchantworld.com. While you're there, feel free to go over and submit a story on any of the topics online. We've got an online form that lets you record directly in your browser, or you can record it with your phone and just email it to me at planeswalker.squee@gmail.com. And that'll be great. We can work out something. And when I have enough content on any topic, I'll release more episodes that way too. And that's pretty much where I'm at right now. So clues.
Hey, you can find me on the Twitters. I'm at LockLuzé, spelled just like it is in the show notes, unless Chewy changed the show notes? No?
Not as far as you know.
Not as far as I know. As of recording time, the show notes are correct in potential. So there's that. You can also find me on the Random Discard podcast right here on the MTGCast network, as well as on our own website, randomdiscard.com. Other than that, the sky's fine, a little cloudy.
Are you saying you checked?
I did, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, while I was on the phone, I peeked out the window to make sure.
Guys, so it's still there. It's all good.
Yeah, still be in the sky.
Good, I would miss it.
Yep, me too. Me too. And hey, there's now another broken probe on Mars. So that happened last week.
I mean, you know what?
Sorry about that, by the way.
Oh, that was you. Okay.
I mean, I will almost certainly get blamed for it, so.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was a dealership transfer, so.
See?
Yep. There you go. Oh, and by the way, if anyone did not get all of the Flash jokes from earlier, what you want to do is you want to go find the theme song to the 1980s, like literally 1980 was the year it was released, Flash Gordon film, and you will not regret it. Go do that now.
You can also watch the movie. You want something that's just weird.
You might regret that. Yeah.
I'm not saying you won't regret it. I'm saying you can watch the movie. It does exist.
This is true. It is a thing.
It can be done. It's not good, but it can be done. And you'll get some Family Guy jokes you didn't get before. They make a lot of jokes about the Flash, or not the Flash, but Flash Gordon.
Right.
Or you can just go watch the opening of Big O. It's very similar.
Yes, actually it is. And it makes
at least as much sense. And if you are a Manapool patron, then you know that already.
Yeah.
If you're one of the odds and ends tier patrons. Mm-hmm. Because we talked about that a while back on an odds and ends that went up at some point recently.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all I got.
Yay, random discard. Don't you have an episode that needs to go up still?
I do. Look, last week was real rough for me. It was...
That was not a damn it clues get to work. That was a I don't remember seeing it. So
yeah, no, it's still on my hard drive. I was going to edit it before the show, but I decided to eat instead.
Food is probably better.
So, I mean, hierarchy of needs is in effect.
Yeah, I guess.
All right then. Well, then that just leaves me, and you can follow me on Twitter at the Manapool. You can send me an email. Send that email to Chewy. That's chewie@mtgcast.com. If you want to see some of the other stuff that I'm doing, then you can go to my YouTube channel, youtube.com/c/TheManapool, where in the last week since we recorded Monday Night Magic, I have uploaded a second episode of Dark Echo, that really neat game where everything is a visual representation of sound because you can't see anything. I can throw rocks now in the second episode.
Whoa.
So, yeah. So that's cool. It's a really fascinating game. I'm afraid that it might not make for great videos because there's really not much to see other than, you know, the sound lines of your echoes bouncing around and the little red things that are going to kill you, you know, their sounds. That's it.
But
I can throw rocks now, but people keep telling me how much they like it. So there are 80 levels in this game. I'm going to do one more video and see if things get stale. So let me know. If you guys want to see more or less, if you happen to see it, leave me a comment there. Other things that I've done on the YouTube channel, I finished, finally, after all this time, VVVVVV. I decided I would knock out the last three trinkets, which was all that was left to do. I beat the game, you know, I beat story mode, but I really wanted to collect all of the collectible trinkets that were scattered throughout the map. And I had three left, and I knocked them out in one video and thought I was done, and then more stuff happened! So that was really cool. So, yeah. They merged to form Devastator. It was cool.
You gotta watch out when they do that.
Yeah, I didn't even know they could do that. The other big thing that I've been doing on the channel is playing, finally, Five Nights at Freddy's 4, which I went into detail last week, sort of accidentally. I don't know. It just came out of me. It turns out that my douchebag brain was not triggered at all by Five Nights at Freddy's 4. I had trouble sleeping the first night that I played, but that's because my stomach was upset, not because my brain wouldn't leave me alone. So it turns out all of my trepidation was for naught. The game is very much jump scary, but none of it stuck with me and kept me awake at night. So that's always good. But if you want to see me, you know, screaming, literally, then, you should check it out. I'm also doing something a little extra, with it, a little storyline that goes with it there that I'm really quite proud of. So as of right now, 3 episodes have gone public and the 4th one, will go public like tomorrow afternoon sometime, and I still have to record and post night 5. And then I'm gonna play Five Nights at Freddy's Sister Location, which is the newest game that just came out this month that I have not played or seen anything of or anything. So that'll be fun, for a certain value of fun. I highly recommend if you do watch these videos, you watch them with headphones, because the game is very much based on sound, so if you're just listening through speakers, you might not actually pick up on...
Yeah, it didn't work as well when I was listening to it on speakers, so yeah. I'm going to go back and rewatch some of it with headphones.
So listen, yeah. Chewy, I watched the first episode, I told you before we recorded, and I just want to tell you, listeners, definitely go and at least watch the first episode, because in my opinion, one of the most hilarious things to ever see is Chewy, while wearing headphones, lean an ear closer to his monitor to try and hear something as if that's going to help. And he doesn't just do it the once. No. It happens repeatedly. He can't.
And I don't know why I do that.
Hey, in your defense, when you turn the Super Nintendo controller left, you turn the car better. This is proven.
Exactly.
That's how it works. If you push the elevator button harder, the elevator gets there faster. This is how it works. That's science.
But I actually think I'm doing it. Like, I lean forward and turn my head down, so that I'm not staring at the screen, so I don't have that visual input clouding my brain, I think is actually what I do. Like, I lean forward slightly and look down so to where I'm not looking at the screen, and because you can't see anything, you're leaning out of the door into the darkness. But if I look at the screen, I'm going to try to see things. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Like, it's, not really, it's just a way.
It's cool. You don't have to justify yourself to me. I do similar things all the time.
But yeah, the first Five Nights at Freddy's, I mean, the fourth Five Nights at Freddy's game is very much based on audio, and that means that when you get the inevitable horrible monster jumping out and screaming at you and jump scaring, you were listening super intently immediately before that happened, which makes it worse, or better, depending on your point of view. I also have up another, or I don't have it up yet, I have another totally accurate battle simulator video that I did with my friend Molly, waiting to go up. Hopefully I can get that done tomorrow.
Those are pretty entertaining too.
I love that game. They're googly-eyed morons killing each other, and it's brilliant.
I learned a lot about cavalry.
Yeah, you did. But anyway, so that's the YouTube channel. Lots of fun stuff going on there. I'm going to get back to Super Hot for Where Are My Legs as soon as I'm done with all the Halloween stuff, or as soon as I have some time, or as soon as I clear up some hard drive space. Because, yeah, having a bunch of videos in the can means that the hard drive space sort of gets eaten up. So that's the thing I have to balance. But anyway, so that's what's going on there. Please do go check out the videos. It's I've got a face cam. It's me. You can see what I look like and watch me things. I've been told many times over the years that I'm like a human cartoon from people that I work with, oddly enough. So I'm very expressive. I like to think that's one of my positives. Yeah. But anyway. And if you like it, subscribe or share it with your friends, because I'm trying to grow the channel, and the best way to do that at the size my channel's currently at is by word of mouth. So by all means, tell somebody. If you enjoy it, then, you know, tell a friend. And then they tell 2 friends, and then they tell 2 friends, and so on, and so on. It's a Wayne's World joke.
It's like some kind of social virus.
Yeah, it's a socially transmitted disease is my YouTube channel. Is there anything else? Oh, and if you do want to help support what I do, then check out the Patreon. It's patreon.com/themanapool, where you can get all of the YouTube videos and Manapool episodes early. You can get the odds and ends, which is all the stuff recorded before and after Monday Night Magic and the Manapool, where it's just us talking about all the stuff we don't talk about on the show, including swearing, because it's uncensored. And it turns out that listening to Clue swear is one of the perks for being a patron at that tier.
In fact, I promise I will swear immediately after the show.
And that's a promise I mean, you can count on.
But I've heard that from multiple people that, oh my God, listening to Clue swear is just makes it all worth it. I'm like, wow, that's awesome. And I have to admit, after all this time, I still love it when Clue swears. I'm not gonna lie. So, oh, and over on the Manapool, just while I'm here, we're doing spooky subtypes for the lead up to Halloween. So 2 weeks ago we did zombies, last week we did vampires, and then this week we're doing everything else that's creepy and spooky. So, you know, spirits, skeletons, because they're spooky, scary skeletons. Someone just recommended on Twitter that we do spiders. Great, thanks for that. Buh. So yeah, any of those other spooky subtypes we're going to do on the next episode, and then the week after that we will cover all of the commander cards and all that cool stuff. So yay, because we didn't get a preview, because we suck. But we didn't get a preview here either, so we also suck.
Yep.
But oh well. We don't do it for the preview, we do it to entertain you guys listening.
Is it a disservice if we just invent cards to preview?
No, we tried that once and no one cared. But that was before we were big at all, so.
Wait, gotcha. Are we big?
No, not us. I meant Manapool.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that thing's huge. Like, I mean, that podcast has been around forever.
It'll be 9 years in just a couple weeks.
Yeah.
That the Manapool has been around. That's insane.
It's learning in the cursive. Membrane.
It turns out. Nobody learns cursive anymore.
But, I mean, the Manapool's going to try.
It turns out that my relationship with the Manapool is actually the longest relationship I've ever had, because Lex and I were only together for 7.5, and Manapool's about to hit 9, so I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Ow, it is my first love. Lie. It is my great love. There we go.
That's better.
But anyway, so we're going to go now, but if you want to help support Magic podcasting in general, but not me specifically, that's perfectly understandable. You can go to mtgcast.com, click on support MTGcast, and sign up for a monthly donation. Because while MTGcast is completely free to all of you listeners, and it's completely free to all of us podcasters, it's not actually completely free and actually costs a lot of money to keep running. So every little bit there also helps. Yay. And that's it for this episode of Monday Night Magic. Thank you, as always, to Clues and Squee for joining me.
Woo! Pleasure.
And thank you all so very much for listening. And go play some magic.